If I can get your attention, we'll go ahead and get this meeting kicked off. We'd like to welcome everybody here tonight. Appreciate you all coming, and especially those that had to travel a ways. We appreciate that. We do need to excuse Dr. Woodward. He had a call first thing in the morning and let him know where we ended up on some topics, and of course he'll get to read the minutes also. So now let's start off by introducing our RAC members. We'll start down there with you, Joe, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and what group you represent.
I'm Joe Batty. I represent agriculture.
Daniel Davis, sportsman.
Andrea Merrill, non-consumptive.
Richie Anderson, cattleman.
Good evening.
Natasha Haddon, BLM.
Rebecca Jones, non-consumptive.
Brad Horrocks, I read that I'm agriculture, is what it says.
Public official.
Oh, all right. Public official.
Tim Ignacio, Ute Indian Tribe.
We better stop.
Tim was talking. Introduce yourself one more time.
Tim Ignacio, Ute Indian Tribe.
Thank you, Tim. All right. Appreciate that. First off, we'll talk about some of the rules we go by. We've got these cards. If you'd like to get up and address our group during the comments section, please grab one of these cards, fill it out, and either bring it up here, give it to me, or give it to these three wonderful women over here, give it to them, and they'll shuttle it up here to us. But we do require that you have one of these if you're going to get up and provide a comment. Comments will be limited to about 3 minutes apiece. When it's time, I'm sure we won't have a problem. But the way it'll work off, first we'll have the division. We'll get up and give us the topic and a presentation on where they'd like to go with that topic. And then afterwards there'll be a question period. And we'll ask questions at that time. Save your comments for later, just questions at that time. And once our question period ends, we'll go into the comment period. So that'll be the time when you'll want to address those that we've got. After that, then after the comment period's done, we'll adjourn that portion of it, and we'll get together and make some motions. So we'll follow that format tonight. So first off, we'll appreciate everybody being here, and we'll have approval for the agenda and the minutes. Can I have a discussion for approval for the agenda? Approval agenda?
I'll make the motion.
Brad Horrocks makes a motion to approve the agenda for tonight. Do I have a second? Dan second that?
Second that, yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
It's approved, unanimous. How about the minutes for last meeting minutes? Do we have any discussion or changes to those minutes? Not hearing any. Do I hear a motion to approve those minutes?
I'll make a motion to go ahead and approve those minutes from the last meeting, which was December?
Yeah. That was Dan Abeda made that motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Brad Horrocks made the second. All in favor?
Two, three,
four. That is unanimous. All right. Thank you. Don't be afraid. We'll have a wildlife board. I don't have a board. Dan, did you have that by chance?
You know, I did. I typed up those notes and I sent them to the two of you. I apologize. I did not bring those notes.
I apologize. I thought I printed them and I couldn't find them when I was leaving the house. So
I just realized that here a few minutes ago. So I do not have a. I guess I'm not prepared to.
You did really well on them too.
Yeah,
you did excellent on the notes, but
I know that. At least I don't remember that. You know, anything that we voted on or that didn't go through the board process. I think everything was in that January board meeting. I think everything was pretty well in line with what we discussed and voted on here at the December RAC. I'm wrong. Ax, you were at that board meeting, weren't you?
It's been a while.
It was pretty rough.
Yeah, that was a fair one. Mm-hmm. Right? Am I thinking right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So there were some changes.
Okay.
So
Can you summarize those for us?
Yeah.
You're probably a better.
I'm looking up the email that you sent right now.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe we'll let Boyd do it so we can get the numbers right.
I could ballpark it.
Yeah, no, I apologize. I should have had a hard copy of those notes in front of me.
Okay. Hi, Randy. Oh, you don't want me to read the whole thing, huh? Okay. There was just one action item, which was the Black Bear recommendations and rule amendment. There was a lot of discussion on it, and some motions were made and passed that were then reversed. So in other words, they made a motion and then they passed it, and they noticed that there was some problems in how they were going to be enforced statewide, because they didn't have enough time to take some of these things that they had passed around to the RACs and to have any discussion regarding from law enforcement and from other regions regarding how they were going to enforce these. And so they reversed those and then instructed the division to take a look at the things that were passed so that they can address them the next time they meet, or the next time they meet to talk about bears. The bottom line was, accepting the division's recommendations as proposed. There was modification that was proposed from the Utah Houndsman Association to change the dates on LaSalle, San Juans, and Book Cliffs. This motion is the one that initially passed through the board, but then they discussed it. As I got through saying, they discussed it and decided that there was other ramifications in other areas and other rules that played an effect on that, and so they reversed it, and they went back to the division's recommendations as proposed.
Thank you, Boyd, and thank you, Dan, for those minutes also. Let's turn the time over to our chief here and ask Boyd to give us an update on the regional update.
Happy to do that. First off, to start off, Mr. Chairman, I want to welcome the two new RAC members, Rebecca Jones, who's down here. She was the shy one. We'll get her up there, and her hand will be waving before we're done here. And she's representing non-consumptive. If you'll remember, Melissa Wardell moved out of the area, so we looked and looked and looked and found another really good person. So welcome, Rebecca. The next new person that you see up here is, and anybody who's from the area knows Natasha. Natasha is BLM representative. They decided they were going to make a change in their wildlife representation, and I don't know whether they drew straws or what, but Natasha got the short straw. So we're happy to have them, and I'm sure you're glad to see a couple more women on the rack. That's really good. So and before I get into overall regional updates, I would be remiss if we didn't wish Troy Justison a happy birthday. So happy birthday, Troy. You know, that young man back there drives around all these racks and really shows a passion for wildlife, and he really exhibits that, and especially to be here on his birthday. I'm going to have Dax stand in for me when it's my birthday and I have to be here. So Good to see you, Troy.
Boyd?
Yes.
While we're doing that, let's we want to thank you guys for the hamburgers tonight and Clint for cooking. I don't know, but anyway, just while we're doing that a little bit.
Yeah, I want to thank you guys for coming early and letting us feed you. And there wasn't any wine, but we did dine. So thank you very much. Appreciate that.
A state meeting without any whining, that surprised me.
Very good.
Welcome, Joe.
Okay.
Hello. Sorry.
Let me get into some of the updates. It's been a long time since we've gotten together, and it's amazing to me how busy my folks get this time of year. They're busy all year, but this time of year they're exceptionally busy getting things going and getting things out there. First of all, in our aquatic section, they're working out in Meadow Creek right now, working on some fish habitat, some bank stabilization. We've had some issues with the banks getting knocked back, and they did some work out there that ended up getting trampled. And so he's out there again and working on that, planting trees and reinforcement of banks. Natalie is doing some recon work out at Starvation right now, looking for spawning walleye. And from angler reports, it sounds like they're waking up. The walleye are starting to move around a little bit. I was out there yesterday and did some netting with Natalie, and we netted some huge, huge walleye, and they're just not quite ripe and ready to go yet, but they're just on the verge. The males are, as you could imagine, they're ripe and ready to go, and they're just waiting for the females to come on near the beds and to get ready. So she's starting to find some of those, and what they want to do is they want to use this as backup in case we have trouble collecting eggs out at Willard Bay. We find when we collect the eggs and we go through the process and put them out as fry, they have a better chance of living. And so, we're still waiting to on Stewart Lake. We've got some work going out on Stewart Lake. Some of you from locally here might have noticed some smoke coming out from Stewart Lake. That was intentional. We're burning cattails out there, and we're going to do another burn here soon, as soon as conditions are conducive to a burn. Our habitat section is busy putting in food plots out on Kevin Conway WMA. So we continue to work through that project. We've started building guzzlers and aprons and getting them ready to go. We'll be starting to put some more of those this fall out in the book cliffs. Our law enforcement have been really busy this time of year. They get even busier when they're trying to get their cases taken care of and get all of that information out. I've got some of them have been really big. I've got a couple of cases I just want to give you a little bit of information on. On one case, they killed 9 elk and 5 deer. And these are three folks, and two of the elk were trophies. In Duchesne County, they found them guilty, and as well as in Uinta County, they received felonies, and they were sentenced to 75 days in jail and a $15,000 fine, as well as 36 months probation. In Uinta County, they were also found guilty of 2, and they were Class A misdemeanors, and they were sentenced to 10 days and $1,100, and that went to help stop poaching. So they were really big. This case was a big case, and it took a lot of time and a lot of effort, and I certainly applaud the COs for working hard at this. There's another case. The second case was two people, and they were found guilty in Duchesne County, and they were sentenced to, this was a $16,000 fine that went to Help Stop Poaching Fund, and they killed three trophy bull elk on the Wasatch Limited Entry Unit and Dry Gulch, and three deer in the Book Cliffs. So the guys are working hard, and these are just two, but it was a big case, and I just wanted you to know that they're working. And
these are only a couple individuals, and these are two of the biggest cases that we've seen in this region in many, many years. These were actually a lot bigger than what we're telling you about here. These guys not only got charged with wildlife crimes, but what we're seeing more and more of is drugs and theft in the counties. A couple of these guys were stealing backhoes and snowmobiles and all kinds of equipment, trailers, camp trailers. So anyway, we end up, lots of agencies put lots and lots of hours on this. I think wildlife alone, where were we at, Eric, are you out? I think we're around 12 search warrants just on one individual to try to track him down. He was jumping all over the place. He knew law enforcement was coming and getting close. He had multiple storage units in one county, and then he lived in a couple different places, and he kept bouncing around. So anyway, these were very, very big cases. Lots and lots of hours went into this. And there again, you're only talking two individuals on the one case and a couple individuals on the other. So two very big cases out here in the basin.
I'll tell you, that's a good deal.
Okay, while I'm talking a little bit about wildlife, would you grab Tanya Tucker, planner? Tanya, I'm going to ask you here as soon as I am done to talk about about your schedule. It's huge, and I couldn't get it out on my computer. So, we'll go to wildlife now. They're starting their sage-grouse lek counts, and if any of you are interested on going on a sage-grouse lek count, you're welcome to go. Just get a hold of Brian Maxfield or call my office or Dax and get Maxfield's number, and he'll line you up to go take a look at a sage-grouse count. But you got to get up really early in the morning, earlier than I get up. So, and then they're checking out their GPS collars. We have a number of GPS collars out throughout the region on deer and elk to get movements and migration patterns of these animals so that we can manage them better. I believe I've talked a little bit about that in past RAC meetings. We're also going to be doing our spring range rides. And for those of you who don't know, we go out on horseback and take a look at the range and see what the condition is on the range. If you want to go out with the biologist on one of those, get in touch with them and set up a time when you can go out. But they're going to be starting their spring range rides right away soon. And deer classifications, that's the same thing. If you're interested on going out and doing some deer classification, same thing. Just go out in the morning and with the biologist, and he'll show you what he does or she does. And you'll get to learn just what it is they do. I think that's it for here, but I've asked Tanya if she couldn't look in her planner and just, we've got a lot of work. She's just a busy, busy person right now.
An understatement. So we have a turkey clinic coming up on Saturday from 9 to 1, and it's just a basic turkey clinic. Funny, I thought we geared it towards children 17 and under. And first-time turkey hunters, and I had an 80-year-old man call me today who was very interested in learning to turkey hunt. So it ranges from all ages, so it should be pretty fun. He didn't have a computer, so we had to register the old-fashioned way. We have the National NAS Tournament for all Western states coming to Salt Lake next weekend. State staff has been asked to go and assist in Salt Lake if we can, so some of us that are National Archery and School certified will be at this Western National Tournament next weekend. So it keeps us fairly busy. We have a loon watch scheduled at Steininger the next Saturday. So every Saturday this month, there's something going on. From 9 to noon, the loons have already started showing up on all the reservoirs, and it's one of our watchful wildlife events that we try to get the public engaged to go do. Then we have a bass salvage scheduled with aquatics out at Steininger. So if you would like to come and earn dedicated hunter hours, or if you want to just come and assist us before they drain Steininger this fall, we could use all the help we could get with the bass salvage, as well as that same weekend we will be hosting the State Youth Hunter Education Challenge in Salt Lake. So a lot of us will be split in places. And then we have an O-Rite open house coming up at the National Wildlife Refuge that we usually assist with that same day. So if you want to come and attend a fun event, call me. We've got a lot going on, more than I can keep up with. Free Fishing Day also is coming up June 9th, so keep that in mind. And we will be doing a bluegill salvage that day and that weekend at Steininger. So lots of fun things to get involved with if you want to. I think that was it.
Tony, where are you putting this the salvage fish? You've taken those to Red Fleet?
So the bass are going to go to Red Fleet. And again, reminder to the public, we are the ones that transplant the fish, not anyone else. Only individual wildlife employees are certified to do that. So the bass are going to Red Fleet, and then some salvage ponds that we have set aside so that when we refill Steininger, we will be able to tap back into that pool of fish and restock it. And then the bluegill we're aiming, I think, for 14,000 fish to go into our salvage ponds. And then we're sending 4,000 of the bluegill out to, right, Sam? Is that right? Yes. 4,000 are going to go out to the Wasatch Front to fill the community fishing ponds. So.
Thank you. And last week, she was busy still doing goat watches and things like that.
Goat watches, home and garden show, Western Wildlife Society conference, or State Wildlife Society.
With that, I'll turn the time back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, appreciate that, Boyd. Thank you. I failed to recognize David Gordon. David, raise your hand, wave to us. Dave is a past board RAC member also. He just got off. We appreciate him being here and joining us again tonight and all the time and service he put in. I'm not sure exactly how much time, but I know I've been here about 5 years. You were here before me, so thank you.
Came on the same time.
About the same time. All right. Appreciate you being here with us also. Well, with that, we'll turn the time over to Covey. Covey Jones, he's our regional wildlife manager. And he's going to give us a presentation on airbows. Big game coordinator.
Yeah, I think worse, Randy. It's okay.
All right.
actually, I'm not giving this presentation, but I'm just going to announce from a division perspective why we're having this presentation. And the rationale is that we don't have a position on this. Airbows, it's a weapon that I think
use of airbows.
Seen it on YouTube or used. Is that not on? Am I just not close enough? If I got to put it right in my mouth?
Yes.
Okay. So face the mic.
That's okay.
This?
On airbows.
That is quite close.
But I can hear you.
I'm uncomfortable. Okay, so it's tough, Tanya. Did you just snort?
Yeah.
Okay. So we don't have a stance on airbows, but what we'd like to do is get some public input. We had a company that this is their product. They approached the division and said, we would like this to be considered as a hunting weapon in Utah. I said, well, we'd really like to know what our public thinks about that. So we'll allot them, according to how we handle this in RAC meetings, they have up to 15 minutes for a presentation, and then questions and comments, just like anything else. Not an action item, though, just an informational.
Stand really close.
Unfortunately, never mind. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the RAC, and all the folks from the DWR. It's a pleasure to be here with you. This is my fifth one in the last 2 weeks, and by far this is the most pleasant and enjoyable one. No offense to anybody else. This has been the most fun for me. My name is Steve Rawl, and I represent a company called Shooting Edge, and we're here to introduce the Air Bolt. The Air Bow is something that Jim Shockey, advertised, and he got 3 million views, and the Air Bolt that we have been promoting has gotten 6 million views, so just for the record. Talk. Yeah, there you go. That's where we want to be. Shooting Edge is a company that was started by Marvin Carlston, the founder. He's the guy who actually invented the graphite arrow shaft. He's a Utah boy. I've been in Lehi for near 30 years. Served two terms on the Archery Trade Association board. He's an innovator, the guy who created the expandable broadhead. All that. We've got a Protex glove that allows hunters to not shoot themselves in the hand if they have any problem with their bow, which, believe it or not, happens. He's created some other products for black powder, and he's created this Air Bolt. The Air Bolt, it makes an air gun, a powerful hunting tool, more than capable of taking large game. It comes out of the barrel at up to 500 feet per second. You'll see a video in a few minutes that'll show a little bit more. 238 foot-pounds of pressure, of energy, and it's accurate. You can achieve one-inch groups. I know I've achieved one-inch groups at 30 yards, which means you all could probably do a half a minute of angle because I'm not that good. Just a real brief input. We talk about air rifles. I didn't know this till I started working with Shooting Edge, but air rifles have been around since 1580. I don't know how many know that. I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands. That's up to the chairman. But even Lewis and Clark had an air gun that would shoot up to 20 rounds before it had to be recharged.
That's cool.
I found that absolutely fascinating. Wonder why we didn't do more of it. I guess we like the bigger bang from the black powder. What we're looking for is to have the air bolt air gun combo designated as any legal weapon for hunting big game. And why we think it should be approved is because it's an effective primitive weapon. It's effective up to about 100 yards. It's a great starter gun for youth. We don't have a video here tonight, but we've got a video that you can probably find on YouTube of a young man, I think about 12 years old, that took down a 500-pound pig in Idaho with this combo. It's an effective weapon for disabled hunters, folks who are bow hunters who can't pull the bow back, or folks who use high-powered rifles and it just kicks them too hard, or even those with black powder kicks it even harder. This is a great tool for them. And the idea is to retain hunters. Instead of having those folks retire out of hunting, this has almost no recoil, and it allows for a fun hunt. There have been some concerns in the past about the air bolt not being capable of taking big game. It can, in fact, take big game. We'll show this video clip here in a moment. There was a concern a while back about whether the air bolt was subject to excise tax. The air bolt itself actually, there's $1.05 that's paid out in excise tax on the air bolt, if there's any concern there. Let's hope technologically we can make this work. Is this tied in?
Jesus.
All right, ready to do some accuracy testing now. We are going to do two groups, three shots each at 30 yards on target downrange. Got the gun aired up. We've removed the muzzle cap here just so you can see the loading process a little bit better. So we get the nock placed in there. Twist up those vanes and just push it on in. All right, see how she does.
Saskatchewan to Hartman whitetails to do exactly what we just did. It's a special arrow, and that special arrow did a special job.
One of those hills in Saskatchewan.
Look at that exit hole right there. Oh my gosh, look at this buck, Al.
It's a shame that the new products hit the market. First thing that people do is try to figure out what's wrong with them. And I think technology is what keeps things moving forward in our world. And so I think it's a shame that the gun that I'm shooting on today's show is so effective. Why in the world wouldn't it be considered a legal hunting device for big game animals anywhere?
That's something new for you.
Mr. Chair, we're open for questions if there are any.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that. All right, questions? Anybody in the audience have a question on the air bolt? We'd sure like some input. If you would, come up, step up to the mic, state your name, and then your question.
Maybe not. My name's Tyrell.
What's your last name, Tyrell?
Hey Beglin,
thank you.
Dedicated hunter. With the air bolt, so are you saying that we're going to try and open it up to everybody or just those that can't pull back a regular bow?
Well, we're looking for it to be approved as during the any legal weapon, so anyone could use it.
That's about all I have.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Concerns? How about from the RAC members? Do you have any questions on this? Dan?
Yeah, I'm just curious. What about other states? Have they, legalized this air bolt?
I can't tell you which states those are right now. The attorney didn't give me all that information, but there are 10 states thus far that have approved this.
And just one other question. How has this gone over in the other regions in Utah here? Does it seem to be...
We haven't had anyone jump up and down and say no, heck
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of interesting questions. There was some concern that it might cannibalize archery. It's not meant to cannibalize archery. Marvin Carlston, the guy who invented all this stuff, loves arrows, so he thought, well, there's an air gun, and maybe I could shoot an arrow out of it and make that work. So he's proven that model, and so we're just here for information now, and then hopefully the next go-around we could get a positive vote. We've gotten 6 million views on this particular video and videos like it that represent this combo. There's a lot of interest, but that's across the country. We've shown at some of the hunting shows in Salt Lake. We've got a lot of positive input there. This is where we're looking for... you know, the final word. As Covey said, DWR is neutral. I can tell you that I invited Mike Styler to come shoot it at Jake's Archery, and he sure enjoyed it, but he's left it up to the process, which is appropriate.
It looks to me like it'd be a lot of fun. You know, it's kind of exciting, I think. My gut is telling me it doesn't belong in the archery world, even though that's what my guts tell me. But as far as in the hunting world, I think it probably has a place. So.
And that's what we're hoping to hear from everybody. We haven't got any no one said no, but everybody's been appropriately either quiet or supportive because it's something different.
Yeah, when I first heard it, I heard the air bow, and I thought, there's no way that's a bow. It just didn't have a string. Show me that string.
Somebody else's. That's another company with the air bow. We just call this the bolt, air bolt.
Yeah, that makes sense. Other questions or comments? Anybody?
Yeah, I've got another one. Okay. So what is the maximum effective range for, say, a deer or... Or an elk?
Maximum effective range at this point in time is 100 yards.
I see.
With practice, you might get it out to 120, but most folks are going to be between 50 and 100.
I see.
So it's still going to require a hunter to hunt and stalk.
At 500 feet per second, is that what the video said?
500 feet per second is the max that we've had. As you saw, the range was just below 500 down to 464 feet per second.
You know, you shot a whitetail. What about penetration on something as big as an elk?
It will punch through an elk. With the right broadhead on it, it will punch through an elk.
Even DWR employees need to come to the mic and state their names.
Crystal,
I figured they knew me.
We have to record you. Welcome, Crystal.
Hello.
And I can promise you, having served on a commission, pretty soon it's going to be videoed, so you got to step up to the mic.
Crystal Fridley, Division of Wildlife. You said the 10 other states approved it, the abilities, or is it restricted in any way?
As far as I know, it's a general season. Okay. Any legal weapon.
Other questions, comments? All right. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you coming and sharing that with us.
Thank you very much.
Interesting. Colby, we'll ask you to come back up, and we'll move on to the next topic, and it is an action item, the Bucks, Bulls, and Once-in-Lifetime Permit Recommendations for this year.
So with that, we'll get on to the 2018 Bucks and Bulls Most Likely Recommendation. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Starting with
general season limited entry deer permit recommendations.
Okay, so this is a graph of the general season buck deer harvest starting at 2008, 2017. On the y-axis, you have the number of deer harvested, and then on the x-axis, down there at the bottom, you have the years. And the take-home from this is that the most recent years have been some of the best years in deer hunting in recent history. Again, this last year, 2017, we were over 29,000 deer harvested statewide. We peaked there in 2016 with over 30,000. If we take a look at buck-doe ratio trends, it mirrors that. In the early 90s, we were managing statewide for about 8 bucks per 100 does. And then as we've rewritten these plans and listened to public input and gone through the process, we manage now for either a unit that's on general season 15 to 17 bucks per 100 does or 18 to 20. In 2015, we peaked there, and now it's trending back down and still at the very top statewide is what we manage for. So we're within the guidelines. That's a good place to be. Also, I guess the other thing to keep in mind is that there are a lot of bucks on the landscape. Not only are there a lot of deer on the landscape, but there are a lot of bucks on the landscape right now. One more quick thing about this slide before I move on. When we do this, you'll notice it says general season public land units. we exclude the units that are primarily private land, so it doesn't skew the data. It would come in a lot higher than this if we included some of those private land units.
And it excludes the limited entry also then?
It excludes.
It's public.
Yeah. Yep. On to fawn production trends, this number, we like to see it at about 60. 60 fawns per 100 does is, when we're looking at populations, that's a great place to be. Since 2000, we've been up above that and just down below that. Right now, we're just about there, slightly below 60 fawns per 100 does. Looking at the 2018 general season deer permit recommendations, for 2017, we recommended 89,050 permits. And for 2018, we're recommending an increase of 2,000 permits. Part of this increase, there's a couple reasons for this increase. One is unit by unit management allows us to offer more opportunity where we're exceeding the expectations of the unit. And that's why we can do that. Another reason is we had some units across the state that were perennially over objective. And we instituted in the fall, we brought forward an early season rifle hunt. So one of the things we kept hearing on some of these units is we don't have the ability to increase here because of hunter crowding. And in the plan, it allows us to use tools to distribute those hunters across time. So the early season rifle hunt allows us to offer more permits on some of those units where we're continually exceeding, but we're running into hunter crowding issues. So with that, on 13 units, we'll recommend no change. On 10 units where we can, we'll recommend an increase, and then recommend a decrease on 6 units where we need to get back to what we've agreed to manage with the public. I'm breaking these up by region, starting in the northern region. On the left side, you have the unit, followed by the objective, and then the last 3 years' buck-doe ratios. And then to give that data, to smooth that data, the three-year average, followed by the 2017 permit recommendations, and then the 2018 recommendation. So starting with the Chalk Creek East Canyon, recommending increases there, as well as the Camas and the Box Elder. You'll notice the two stars on the Chalk Creek East Canyon, Morgan South Ridge, and the Camas, and that is to indicate that early rifle season is on those units. In the central region, where we're exceeding there, we're recommending a very slight increase on the Oker Stansberry unit. In the southern region, recommending increases here on the Fillmore and on the Pine Valley. And when we get to the Pine Valley, just as a reminder here, when we're talking about general season units, we're managing for quality and opportunity. The quality we've agreed to between that 18 to 20, and then to provide as much hunting opportunity as we can. One of the things we deal with as an agency, and it became apparent this year, we had over 470,000 applications to hunt big game. And when we're looking at the resource and point creep and opportunity, it becomes something that's really, really difficult to manage. When you're staring at 470 plus thousand applications saying, okay, how do we provide this? How do we make it so people aren't sitting at home? How do we make it? You can't hunt without a tag in your pocket. And so where we have opportunity, well, you can, but it doesn't work out so well. Right, Tori? So how do we provide that opportunity? Another thing, and specifically the Pine Valley just reminds me of this, and that is there was a study done in Colorado where they played with their buck doe ratios a little bit, and they raised them and lowered them. But what they really wanted to know is what effect that had on the population. Positive, negative effect, where they hit thresholds. And what they realized is when they raised $5 per 100 does. So in Colorado, on some of these units, when they hit, they went from 20 to $25 per 100 does on a population. And when they did that, they lost 8 fawns per 100 does. And so it's just as a reminder that when you're hitting a unit that's reaching carrying capacity or doesn't have a lot of room to grow and you're running high buck doe ratios and you don't offer that opportunity to lower that buck doe ratio back down, you can negatively impact opportunity moving on into the future. So just like the rack and the members of the public to keep that in mind as we go through the presentation. On the southern region continued, recommending a decrease on the Fish Lake, where we're trending downward there, and then a slight increase on the Southwest Desert and on the Zion unit. And on the Zion unit, we did implement that early season there as well. In the southeastern region, recommending an increase on the 9 Mile and a decrease on the LaSalle Mountains, where we on lower. The three-year average is there, but the last year. And we do take into account trend also, not just the three-year average. In the northeastern region, here, we're recommending decreases on the North Slope and on the Wasatch Mountains East, where we're trending down again, trying to get ahead of that and come into the objective. Recommending an increase on the South Slope, Bonanza Vernal. On to premium limited entry deer. These are a little different. These permits are set in the statewide plan. As long as they're meeting objective, which is that 40% of the bucks harvested are at least 5 years old or older, the permits are recommended to remain the same, and so that's what we're recommending. On the premium limited entry units, we manage the buck doe ratios a little differently. Although the limited entry permits there remain the same, we manage buck doe ratios with management permits. And on the Henry Mountains, where we have that downward trend, we're recommending a slight decrease in those permits. Also on this slide, you'll notice at the bottom, we brought forward the cactus buck hunt last fall, and we're recommending 14 permits for that hunt as well there on the Ponsagon. The limited entry deer permit recommendations. The book cliffs, which is always at the top, or has been lately at the top of its objective, and we have a little more opportunity to offer there, recommending a slight increase there. On the North Slope Summit, we brought this hunt back a few years ago. When we did it, after looking at it, we realized we over-allocated permits there. Those were going undersubscribed and some being turned back in, so we've reduced that there. And then also recommending an increase on the West Desert Vernon, where we're above there. Looking at the late season limited entry muzzleloader permits, the Beaver qualified, and these qualify for this season based on the previous year's buck doe ratios. So 2016 buck doe ratios were exceeding, so they're in the 18 to 20 category, and they're exceeding 20 bucks per 100 does. So the Beaver met that, and it got brought on this year, as well as the North Slope, recommending 5 and 10 permits there respectively. The Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz, it fell out, and so we discontinued that hunt in the fall. And then recommending a decrease on the Wasatch Mountains East, and that follows a decrease in general season permits for that unit. So an overall small increase there, 167 to 172. There's just a breakdown of what it looks like by weapon type. Again, the decrease there in the any weapon is mainly due to the decrease in those North Slope Summit permits, as the other weapon types are increases. On the general season limited entry elk permit recommendations. Now the spike bull and any bull permits are set in the statewide plan, and as long as they fall within the parameters there, and we did this year, and so we're recommending the same number of those. 15,000 spike and 15,000 any bull, as well as 500 youth any bull permits. It's always asked when these will go on sale, and it's July 17th. Here's a look at the limited entry elk permits by weapon type. I'm recommending an overall increase there of 59 permits. And then we'll go by the age-specific units. So on the 7.5 to 8 year old units, recommending a very slight increase on the Beaver, as we're at the very top end of the objective there, and a decrease on the Book Cliffs Little Creek, as we've fallen below there. Also a decrease on the West Desert Deep Creek. This unit is one of the units that we changed in the statewide elk plan. It was managed at a much lower age objective. So So in order to come into that objective and manage, we manage that in conjunction with the Goshute tribe. We're recommending a decrease there. For the 6.5 to 7-year-old units, we're recommending decreases on the Cache South, Mount Dutton, and Panguitch Lake, and recommending an increase on the Monroe and the Southwest Desert. Under the 5.5 to 6-year-old units, the Manta has been at the very top of the age objective for several years now. We know we have some opportunity to offer there, so we're recommending an increase there, as well as the LaSalle Mountains, 9-mile anthro. The Plateau Fish Lake, again, at the very top end of the age objective, and we're probably missing out on some opportunity, and an increase on the Wasatch Mountains as well. Decreases on both the North Slope Three Corners and the Oker Stansberries as we're below that objective. And finally, the 4.5 to 5-year-old units, recommending a slight increase on the Box Elder Grouse Creek and Pilot Mountain, and a decrease on the Cache North. The 2018 pronghorn permit recommendations. The RAC remembers we brought forward a new pronghorn plan last fall. And in that plan, we explained a few things. One, we're going to switch to age-based management for pronghorn. So when we did the research for the new pronghorn plan, we realized a few things. The main thing was that we were probably missing out on a lot of opportunity. Pronghorn have a high, buck pronghorn have high natural mortality. And they also don't have a lot of antler growth after 2 years old. There are several buck pronghorn that are 2-year-olds. So last time we aged pronghorn in the state of Utah, or looked at the average age of the pronghorn we were harvesting, was 2008 and 2009. And we aged about 700 pronghorn. And what we realized is the average pronghorn being harvested that time was 3.8 years old. In unhunted populations, bucks have shown to have as low survival as 75% survival. So if you had an extra year or two onto that, you're really missing out on opportunity. This increase will help us provide that opportunity and get that age class back down to between 2 and 3, which is what we're managing for in the new statewide plan. And when we get the numbers in for this year, we'll readjust accordingly. 2018 once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations. We also brought forward a new moose plan, which offers some more opportunity there, recommending an increase in bison, increases on both the Bookcliffs and the Henry Mountains units. And when we talk about bison here, I think it's one more thing I want to bring up, and that is that we've had some pretty severe drought on the Bookcliffs, and we are cognizant of this. We're concerned. We're watching this. When we talk about this current recommendation, it'll bring the bison down below the objective by 10 animals. And then in addition to that, if we still continue to have drought and have range concerns and issues there, we would come back to the board in August and recommend additional permits to make sure that we don't damage that range. On the bison archery, again, that's a hunt on the Henrys, recommending an increase there. Desert bighorn sheep, a very slight increase. On Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep, recommending an increase of 8. A lot of that is due to two things. One, we have a new hunt on the Oak Creeks, which we're very excited about. And then also when we went out and caught in the Newfoundland Mountains, we removed a lot of ewes and realized that we need to probably lower our ram to ewe ratio out there and provide that opportunity to sportsmen. A new mountain goat hunt there on the LaSalle's and recommending an increase there, as well as increasing the mountain goat archery only permits from 2 to 4. This slide talks about the Henry Mountains specifically and what we're doing there and what the plan is in case we run into the drought. And then this is just a current monitoring of drought conditions across the state. With that, I'll take any questions.
I guess I got one off the bat. That slide, I think it was one right before that where it talked about your mountain goat archery, there was an increase in that to 4. What was the success rate last year on that? Do we know what?
Not great, Randy.
That's what I was thinking. What I've read, the memory's not very good.
If that success rate continues, we can probably offer a lot of opportunity there. Neither hunter harvested.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Questions? Anybody? Any questions here from the audience? Public? Come on up, if you wouldn't mind. State your name.
My name's Ken Evans. I was born in Neola, born in Vernal, raised in Neola. Live in Jensen now. I've worked in the Book Cliffs the last 12 years. My first question is, you're saying buck to doe ratio. I spent the last 6 years as a dedicated hunter on the Yellowstone unit. I'm not seeing 100 does a day. So that's the problem I have, is that there's not the quantity of animals there. And I have a hard time getting my kids, nephews, and nieces to hunt because there's no quality.
Have you got a question there, Ken?
Well, the question is how are we going to bring our quantity up so there's more opportunity if we just keep giving out all these permits on these general season units? And then also on the Yellowstone or northeastern Eugene region, on open bull units, we offer all these permits, but we feel that we have 10,000 of the 15,000 permits here in the basin. Is there some way that we could limit the amount of people in the northeastern region that are influxing on these open bull units?
What do you think about that, Covey?
We separate those out first. Your first question, which unit was it specific to? And I got to understand what you're really asking.
Yellowstone unit is where I hunt deer, and I've been a dedicated hunter the last 6 years. And I'm on horseback. I ain't driving the roads. I'm riding daylight to dark and having a hard time finding 100-headed deer.
Okay, so I just, and the reason I ask isn't to be combative, it's to understand, are you talking about deer populations, or are you talking about buck hunting? Okay.
Total, you know. Yeah, I'm seeing the bucks, spikes and tooth points.
Sure.
But people do not wait 2, 3, 4 years to shoot a spike and a tooth point. My kids, I can't even get them to hunt anymore.
Okay.
That's very disheartening.
Randall, do you want to talk about the deer population there and what we've done there to work on that?
Sure, just off the top of my head. There is, the Yellowstone population is under objective and has been. It actually, though, was doing really well until last winter, when we actually had a really hard winter over there, and we had 18% of our fawns survive the winter, which really impacted what we had there this last fall, as far as the number of, total number of deer, in addition to the number of bucks that were there. We also had a really high mortality last year, or the winter, not this winter, of course. This winter has been great. Winter before last, when we had extreme snow conditions, and we had about 76, I think, or 78% survival is all on our adult does either, and that represents the adults of the population, which is quite a few deer. Normally that should be at 90% at least survival or not, and so we did see a pretty significant loss last year, last winter, obviously, again, not the winter we're just finishing, the winter before. And so we are down a little bit on the deer population over there from where we were. But 2 years ago, we were at the high of that population and where it had been in 20 years, you know. I, too, have been out here for quite a while now and have watched this population. It goes through cycles and struggles when we have our winters that hit us over there. We seem to average one winter like that about every 4 or 5 years last 20 years over there, and it does take a toll on that population, but it has been up. We are still up compared to where we were 5, 6 years ago over there on that population.
Still no quality.
I'm talking to the population number as far as the number of deer that are out there, so that is the quantity. Quality out there is a different issue, and yet we're actually with the unit-by-unit ability to change tags each year. The buck ratio over there has gone up too, which is going to address some of the quality issue out there as far as the size and the maturity of the age structure even that's out there on those bucks and those kind of things. So we do have the two different issues, of course. One is the age and quality of the bucks that are out there, That it can be driven by how many tags we cut or increase each year. We can change that. Population number, the total number of deer out there, is not driven at all, hardly, by buck harvest. Very, very little in any way. And so that really on the Yellowstone, it's driven by weather patterns, and it's really that simple on the Yellowstone. Some units it's not that way. But in this part of the region, we definitely see it driven by the winters, types of winters we get over there. There's a lot of areas on the Yellowstone that have more deer. The agricultural area is deer, and some of the agricultural zone there below the tribe now have probably more deer than most. I live right there. Most of my neighbors say even the 80 and 90-year-olds are saying this is the most deer they've ever seen that live down in the lower elevations. And so there are areas that are booming with deer on the Yellowstone. It just depends on what area it is you're probably hunting in and those kind of things. So. The population is actually up from where it was before.
Thank you, Randall. Okay, Ken, you had another question.
Another question. So on the Yellowstone unit itself, is it not half tribal, correct? Is not half of the Yellowstone unit tribal ground?
A lot of it is.
So when we're issuing these numbers, we should only consider that half the deer or elk are on state ground for the public to hunt. Because I'll guarantee you when the first shot's fired, they're on tribal ground. And the tribal members have access. Tim can acknowledge this. I've seen Tim there. We ride on each side of the fence. We know each other. And it's no opportunity for the public. I mean, you got half of it on tribal, but we're counting all of it together. We need to split it up, and half them numbers need to be tribal and half need to be state allocated tags, is my comment. Not all one unit. So we don't have the opportunity because.
So the question is, can we do that? Can we do that? Is that a possibility?
What would you like to say to that?
I'd just like to explain how we do it. The permits, we don't base our permits based really on the total population that's out there. So the number of the deer that go to the tribe, because there are a large share of deer that move on and off of the tribe. We totally 100% agree. That's correct. A lot of deer do move back and forth off of the tribe. We've got radio caller data for years now to show that and to prove that. But how the permit numbers are set, these are only for bucks, not the total population of what's out there. And we set that based on the buck-to-doe ratio that's out there. And so that's the number of bucks we see from the previous years and everything else that were there. We're basing it on what harvest we can have on the population we have that exists there and still maintain that buck-to-doe ratio after that. And we've been doing it for a lot of years. That buck-doe ratio over there has been quite stable until last year when we did have a harder winter and we lost deer. So it did go down. So that's where we would come in and look at it. That's why we didn't increase, because actually looking at our management plan, the 3-year average, we would have increased deer buck tags over there this year. Last year, we actually cut the tags because in this meeting, we knew we'd had a hard winter, and so we anticipated that, cut the number of tags last year to address that big loss we had because of the winter mortality. And this year, we've recommended maintaining that population the same, because it's where we manage on the buck to doe ratio that's out there. The number of bucks that are out there is what we manage it by. We aren't managing on the total number of deer in the area, because what matters for in hunting of it is the bucks, not the does.
Randall, I guess that is there any way to count the buck to doe ratios on the tribe as compared to non-tribal land over there? Does that ever
The animals move between the boundaries so much that they, and during the rut, the same bucks that breed on the forest, breed below the forest, and breed on the tribe in between as they go through that. They travel through all of it. The tribe neither side is fenced. It's fenced for cattle. It doesn't stop deer at all. Deer move through that, come and go, and it's actually the breeding population there that we're trying to make sure we maintain anyway.
Mr. Chair, can I suggest maybe we're looking at this incorrectly? One, you know, we don't go and try to manage the wildlife for Colorado that crosses over the border or anything like that, and I view this as a very similar issue. But what I can say is, I'm sure Randall knows what the harvest success rates are for the unit, what the hunter satisfaction is, not doing anything biologically damaging. We would all love more deer, but we can't change that with buck harvest. And populations aren't driven by bucks. But what we can do is work on habitat, improve things for the deer there, create more space, more habitat, and hopefully the herd will continue to grow. Those are the things we can affect. So I think that's where, if we're going to focus our efforts as an agency, as a wildlife agency, that's where we'd focus our efforts.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions?
Just one more comment, please.
It just got to be a question. We're not comment period yet.
Okay. The question is, if we want to get more people involved, we have to get our quality up, and we need to figure out how that is. And that's my question. How are we going to do that? Our youth don't want to get involved because there's no quality.
See, and I guess I disagree with that completely. A great buck is different for different people. I've met several gentlemen who go out and harvest a 2-point, and they're ecstatic. And that doesn't hurt a deer population. Also, I think for a lot of us in this room, we have dreams of chasing that 200-inch buck and getting the harvest. I know I do. That gets me excited, too. But we try to manage for both. I would dare say that in the state of Utah right now, we have some of the best quality we've had in the history of the state. We're bringing 200-inch bucks almost every off of every unit, and it's great. And we have this idea that there are certain units, even on the Henrys, it's hard to kill a 200-inch buck. It's just not like that. So I guess that's perspective.
All right, thank you. Other questions? Tyrell, if you state your name one more time for us.
Yeah, Tyrell A. Beglin. I guess my question is, where does it end? I mean, I've hunted the 9-mile unit for a little over 20 years now. I've slowly watched it decline, both in the deer, but mainly in the elk. It used to be one of the best units in the state. And overcrowding's been an issue statewide for a number of years now, well over 2 decades. And every time we end up coming up to something, you know, we implement a new hunt. Well, it's the late season muzzleloader, the extended archery, hoping that people move over to archery, or this mid-season rifle hunt now. But if we implement it, we just spend the next few years slowly increasing on the tags and then wonder why we got an overcrowding issue still. So, like I say, I mean, my issue is watching the populations go down and the number of hunters going up. I mean, I know everybody wants to have a tag in their pocket every year, but myself included, and I know over 100 people that would be completely satisfied to wait 2 or 3 years, even for a general season tag, to be able to go out there and see the deer that we did 15, 20 years ago and not be fighting 300 people for the same herd.
So what's your question there, Tyrell?
Where does it end?
I don't understand exactly how to answer that question. When we put together statewide management plans, we pull a diverse group of people. We ask our sportsmen what they want. We send out surveys, and then we manage to a plan that they recommend. And we, as long as we're doing things that aren't biologically damaging, when the majority of the sportsmen of the state of Utah tell us they want a unit managed differently.
Is a deer and the elk both on 5-year plans?
Deer's on 5-year. Yeah, I believe elk is it 7-year?
7-year.
Yeah, and when they come up, we go through all of these issues. We struggle back and forth with all of this. Do we want more units that are managed for quality? Do we want more units that are managed for opportunity? How do we want this to look? It's tough. You know, we're always saying that wildlife management, there are several things that are social. You know, there's this end here, which anything past here is biological, and the division comes back and we say, don't do this. This is biologically damaging. And then there's an end over here. It's, if you do anything over here past this, it's biologically damaging. But everything in between here, it's the public's wildlife, and we can really manage it the way we want to. And as long as we're steering in a direction that we can, we're very open as an agency. The truth is, most of us in this room that have on brown shirts are hunters and sportsmen too. I mean, we care about these animals enough that we made a life out of it. Not because we're getting rich. I mean, some of us, Dax, but
yeah.
but none of us want to be remembered as the biologist that did something biologically damaging.
Right, yeah.
We have struggles, but I can tell you that we have more deer in the state right now than we had 20 years ago. We have a lot more elk in the state now than we had 20 years ago.
You know, the way the division does that, when they put a plan together, they have probably around 20 to 30 public people on that, and they usually have half a dozen agriculture and folks and half a dozen sportsmen and a half a dozen other representatives from all the different agencies, just like we are up here. I happened to be on one several years ago for mule deer, and they create sideboards, and it was, you know, you talk about issues and you talk about every area in the state and how it's working. I mean, I was really pleased with how the groups come together, because after the first half dozen, you know, there's pretty good battles, and then eventually they smooth out the rough edges and they come to a spot. So where it ends, I think they got to work within those sideboards, and then next time the plan comes together, make sure that the representatives that are on there that represent your interest are noted, so that they can bring it up and make sure that we don't do something in that area. Okay. Any other questions? Questions by the rack.
I've got a question.
Go ahead, Tim.
Okay. Now you guys are coming up with these numbers. Okay. We also do a head count. Our numbers are dead, man. I mean, and for these individuals to come in and say, okay, you got 15,000 bull or spike bull tags, okay, 10,000 of those people end up in the book cliffs, it's killing us. It's hurting us on the bull side. I said it last time. It's hurting us. We did a head count back in December. 299 head of elk on the reservation. On the south unit. And 128 deer. 224 buffalo. How many buffalo you guys got on the book cliffs? Anybody going to answer for that?
Is that your question?
Yeah, we can ask that. Yeah, our current estimate.
What's your name, Clint? Yeah.
I don't remember.
I know it's your first time.
Clint Sampson, CLINT. No, I'm kidding. Wildlife biologist in the Book Cliffs. No, that's a great question, Tim, how many we have. Our numbers fluctuate depending on time of year, and we put out 21 additional GPS collars on our bison this last winter, which is just incredible, the amount of data that we're getting off them. Then we have five left from the original 20 we did a couple years ago. And so it's showing really good use in the roadless area, which is phenomenal for me, because that's all state-owned land in there, either division land or school trust lands, so we don't have any depredation issues in there, and so we're showing high use in there. We got about around 200 head or so in there right now, and then it shows that they leave about June, about 1st of June or so. Most of those will leave up there to that bear trap knoll,
yeah,
spend some time up there, and then they'll come back in the fall, and then Other groups, we had very low numbers come off on Wild Horse Bench this year compared to last year. And then we had those ones you know about in Range Creek. I think it was probably around 200 head or so. And we pushed, led you guys to push those back and everything. And then as far as what stays on the book cliffs year-round, we're probably looking around 270 so adults that we count as our population objective, full season objective. Is that helpful?
No. Yeah. I know we gave you guys a few, when you guys first started out, we gave you guys 15 head.
Yep.
And then we turned around and gave you guys some more besides the ones you guys brought in from Antelope Island.
I know those original 15.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I know your guys' tags are all red, and our tags are various colors for Christmas, you know.
Oh, as far as ear tags?
So, you know, and to me, why are we killing more? You know, why are we killing more of these animals when the numbers ain't even there? I know the man back there, he works on tribal site. He can vouch for that. He can vouch for that. Yeah, yeah. And he's not a tribal member.
Yep. No, I talked to Kenny quite a bit.
I know you guys need to talk to your public more instead of just 30 individuals. You need to call a big meeting and say, hey, how do you guys feel about this? I'm going to tell you, 99% of your people are going to say, hey, we need to cut back. You know, and for me, you giving 15,000 bull spike tags and 10,000 of them show up here, it's taking a big chunk out of our herds.
So we probably ought to get that number correct because we keep throwing out 10,000. Do we have that number? If we're going to throw out a number, we better throw out the right number.
Please be right, yeah.
We had, 938 spike hunters in the Book Cliffs. They harvested 224 spikes.
So of the 15,000 statewide spike hunters, 900 of them hunted the Book Cliffs.
It was 7.5% of those 15,000 hunters hunted the Book Cliffs.
Thanks, Dex.
What was that success rate again? I'm sorry.
I didn't give the success rate, but the success rate was... 24% Book Cliffs.
How much for the any bull site? How many hundred do you figure you have for the any bull site?
Let's stay on task.
Let's stay where we're at.
Stay on task. Yeah,
we're working with the buffalo right now. Tim, any other questions on the buffalo?
No, I'm good.
All right, Brad.
Am I reading this right? On the Antelope Island, we went from 7 tags down to 2. Is something going there, or are we just transplanting more?
Tanya says you have to pull your mic down. I'm afraid to make Tanya mad. Could you repeat the question?
Brad Horrocks, RAC member.
Okay.
On the Antelope Island, I just noticed in there, if I'm reading it correct, in 17 you had 7 total tags, and this year we got 2.
Yeah.
Just wondering what it...
No, that's a really good question. And that herd's managed a little differently. We manage it in conjunction with state parks. They have several old bulls out there that they would like to cull. But when we offer a tag through the public draw, we can't tell them which animal they have to take. So the plan there is they still want to offer 2 tags through the public draw. But then the manager of the wildlife there on the state park will probably go to what they call the alternate draw list. So anyone who put in for an Antelope Island tag and didn't draw, and ask them, hey, would you like to harvest a bull? We have some older bulls that we need culled from this population. If you're willing to come out and harvest one of those bulls, come on out, and then they would do it that way. So we'll probably end up with the same number, with 7 or close to there, but they'll come from the alternate draw list.
Thank you.
Other questions by the rack?
I got one, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Daniel.
Could you go back to your drought map that you had presented to us and showed us what that looks like?
Yeah. It's almost severe as southeastern, and then it's some of the far southern too. It's not the worst year in the last 20 years if you look at it, but yeah, there are areas that are being highly affected. The Henrys again is an area of concern.
Another question by the rack?
I've got a couple of questions, Kobe. Could you go over the rationale for the increase in deer tags in the Book Cliffs?
Yeah.
Is that, Maybe you just presented the numbers.
I probably could, but I really like it when the region speaks to their recommendation.
That would be good, yeah. I'd be curious. I think it's about an 8% increase in tags or something like that.
Yeah, we've been pretty steady on that top end of the buck-to-doe ratio. Out there in the Book Cliffs, we've had increasingly, you know, great success, especially on that south side since we split the rifle hunt north and south. We've had great success on that southern end, and you know, pretty good satisfaction for the most part from the hunters. I mean, they're pretty happy, you know, killing the average bucks 24 inch 4 points in there, and so we're consistently on that top end. Chance for more opportunity, more people to get out there, like Kobe mentioned, as far as point creep and things like that. So we decided, you know, a slight increase probably shouldn't bring down the buck to doe ratio all that much.
We're still a long way from the population objective, is that correct?
Yes. The current population objective, we're hovering right around that 7,000 mark, and our objective is 15,000. And like Kobe mentioned, harvesting bucks doesn't really affect your population growth all that much. And so, yeah, as far as the overall population, we're still trying the best we can to do our habitat improvements, increase water. We were able to collar 100 deer this last fall and had some help with the Mule Deer Foundation and other people making that happen, and so that's helping us. We also in the future have a plan to collar fawns right when they're born, and then also we're going to collar bears and mountain lions to kind of track their movements. Okay. And see if you know, we can figure out how to grow some more deer out there. It's definitely, you know, front of my mind.
Okay. The other question I have is on bighorn sheep. There's a I think an 8-tag increase statewide on bighorn sheep, and that's attributed to the two new hunts in the state. Did those animals, were those, I guess my question is, or my sense is that the population, bighorn sheep population, is kind of on a downward trend statewide. Is that a true statement?
I think statewide, that's an accurate statement. Not, I think, that is an accurate statement statewide. But when you're managing individual populations, you have to look and see.
Right.
Where you have opportunity and where you don't.
So these new hunts, where did the animals come from? Are these supplemental animals from other states, or where?
So what's the? Dan, the Oak Creeks was a new population that we started that we've never hunted before. So that's a new population that was started 5 years ago.
Oh.
4 or 5 years ago, and so there'll be two permits there, and then the other majority of the increase comes from the Newfoundland Mountains. And that's a population that is doing really well. When we went out and caught there, we noticed two things. One, our ram to ewe ratios, we had a lot of rams. And we pulled a lot of ewes off to restart the Stansberry population. So to get the ram to ewe ratios back where they need to be to have them so the rams don't wander in November, we're recommending that. And also out there when we went and caught, frankly, we noticed that the sheep were probably running up against a carrying capacity. Body condition wasn't great. And so removing some of those rams will help that population.
Okay, thank you.
Another question by the rack.
I have a question, Clint, for the Book Cliffs. So as the trend starts going up on the buck to doe ratio and maybe the average, I don't know if we take in the average adult size as well. Once it gets to, say, 30 or 35, can we not raise the objective to that higher level so that the quality of the deer is better? And again, I'm speaking from a non-biologist term, if that actually helps the quality of the deer. And the reason I ask is our hunt surveys, I hunt a place in Colorado that they're managing, and they send a survey to me for 45 buck to doe ratio, and that's where they're managing. And so some of our units are all around 18 to 20, and therefore the carrying capacity of the field is, or is that just kind of trying to provide more opportunities and not have, you know, creep? Kind of can once it looks like it reaches a level where everybody's killing a 24-inch 4-point, can we not raise the objective to carry a few more bucks in that area rather than bringing it back down to 18 to 20? Can we then move it to 30 to 35 buck to doe ratio in the Book Cliffs? Just a question.
Sure. Okay. So. Let me know if I'm on track.
Okay.
Clint Sampson, wildlife biologist. I forgot last time. Sorry. So the sideboards that manage the bucks in the Book Cliffs are set by mule deer plans that are put in place. And the book lifts is set to go $25 to $35 per 100 does. So those are our sideboards. That's where we live. And we all love it at the top end. You know, I mean, it's great to go out and see big bucks. And so to get it above that 35, to get it to that 35, 45 range, somewhere in there, we'd have to wait for the plan to come up again and then go through the whole public process. It'd have to get approved in the plan and then through the rack and board process that way.
Okay.
But as far as managing, you know, we just try to stay within those sideboards and provide opportunity where there's opportunity, you know, when there's bonus. Dax always jokes about it, like shrimp. You know, he's like, grilled shrimp only lasts so long. So you got to take advantage of them while they're there. And that's how we kind of feel about this year with the Book Cliffs deer herd. We're on that top end. We've been up there for the last few years. I mean, it's not a huge increase. I mean, we're not, I don't think, opening the floodgates by any means by increasing 35 tags. And who knows? You know, maybe one of your family members might draw.
So I got a question. If we raise it up, would that put it into a premium unit? Is that the next level where we go up into the, like, 45?
I would believe so, but that's probably well better.
I think that puts us up, make that a premium unit discussion at that point.
Yes, if that were the desire when the statewide plan came around, you could look at that. And to do that, it's not cut one tag, grow one more buck. To get to those top-tier buck-to-doe ratios, you end up really, really cutting opportunity.
Right.
So instead of it being a 13, 14-year draw, if you started putting in for the book or the Henrys today and you're 18, you might draw in your 70.
So what is the plan for the trying to get the 7,000 to 15,000? I mean, the buck-to-doe ratio doesn't affect overall population is what I've heard a couple of times. So is it the range, summer range, I think, was some of the discussion, habitat? What are the efforts there?
Yeah, all those things. Like I mentioned before, we're on the cutting edge of deer management in Utah right now. I mean, we have GPS collars. Those collars are sending us signals every 2 hours. We're getting signals. And so that magnifies.
Your cell phone. It's pinging your cell phone. Yeah.
You're getting me off topic.
Can I give a statewide perspective on that one, Clint? Is that okay? Because I think this is a really good question. So from a statewide perspective, when we look at our GPS collar data, our biologists go in on these mortalities within a couple of hours. So every time we have a deer die, they go in there, they look at the deer, they crack a bone, they look at marrow, they look at cause-specific mortality. So when you say what is the plan, right now we're going out and we're saying, okay, so this unit has poor fawn survival, but the cause here is predators. Or this unit has poor fawn survival, and the cause here is highway mortality. So then when we come back, we can look at fawn and adult survival and say, if we want this herd unit to increase, which on the book list we do, here are the things that we have to address. And here are the things that we can address. So that's what we're doing. We're doing a lot. Just the South Manti comes to mind, and on that unit, we can look at that and know that we definitely have a predator problem there. A lot of the deer there are being taken by mountain lions. Whereas we have the same survival on another unit, and not one of them has been taken by mountain lion. In the antlers presentation, if you want me to, I can go through some of the herd units that we've looked at over the last few years and show you some of that cause-specific mortality and then how we can address it. If Iraq wants to see that in the antlers presentation.
Sure.
I have a question on the deer. My name's Tim Ignacio, board or rack board member. On the deer in the book clip area, the only ones that are killing any good bucks down there is off the landowners. And these tags are very, very expensive to even get one of those tags. And if you do be lucky to get a tag, you still have to pay the man the trespass.
So the question is,
How does the public get in on that?
Clint Sampson again. Are you talking about that private property that borders the tribe?
The two pieces.
The new, that owned by Mustang Fuels?
That.
Like agency
and
draw?
In Mr. Mark Hill's place.
In Willow Creek?
Yes.
Okay. And so there is a new cooperative management unit out in the Book Cliffs. It's been, we've been hunting it for 2 years now. And it's been a great success. We give the CWMU 10 permits. I think 3 of those go to the public draw. 7 of those are up to the landowner and what he decides to do with those tags. And so it's in the limited entry unit in the Book Cliffs, so the buck to doe ratio is managed the same. And it does, you know, restrict the limited entry guys that are out there hunting. You know, they can't hunt it. It's basically 2 kind of limited entry areas on the same unit. The landowner association tags are issued out of a percentage of private land that is on the unit that falls within that habitat for that animal. So they receive permits for deer, elk, and pronghorn. And those permits are basically given to them to compensate for damage on their property, to basically encourage them to appreciate wildlife and have a value for them. And so that's why we issue those permits. Sometimes they do donate a tag to auction to certain non-government agencies. But as far as, you know, that the quality being any different throughout the rest of the Book Cliffs, it's all managed for the same. But on that CWMU, they are able to hunt a little bit later in the year than the general season. And so that might provide a little bit better quality that way. But as far as receiving those tags or getting those tags or saying those tags are, you know, better than the other limited entry tags, you know, it's probably debatable.
I got a question for you. We was talking about land, those Mustang tags. What did Mustang Oil do last year? Didn't they donate 2 tags to some organization and then let them auction those off and the money stayed in that organization? It was a non-profit organization?
I know that they did one. I was involved with one that they had kind of did a silent auction on that I can't remember exactly, and I can't remember the organization the money went to.
Sergeant Daniel Greer Foundation.
I think it was, too.
Get him on the phone. Get him on the phone.
He's in China.
Oh, it does. It's probably like 2 in the morning there. He's awake.
Mr. Calder participated in one of those hunts, and it was the Daniel Greer Foundation.
The Daniel Greer Foundation. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think they did do 2, didn't they, Daniel? Do you remember?
I don't remember the second one.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was really good of them to do that, because just to donate it to a good organization. So
absolutely. I remember that, too. Yeah, Brandon McDonald, the past RAC member, he was heavily involved in that hunt, too.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry, Tim, did you have another question?
No, I'm good.
Another question by the RAC.
I've got a couple.
Daniel?
I've been compiling my notes to see if anybody can make sense of this. So my question is I go through and look at our deer populations across the state per unit. Roughly about 14 of them units are on a 3-year trend down. So it seems as though these most recent years we've been offering more opportunity to be in the field. Increasing permits. The elk population doesn't. They're a lot more hardy. They're tough. They're not sissy deer, right? But anyways, noticing these declines, is there consideration on the amount of human impact is on that, especially with the drought map and where we finished off 2017 and the winter conditions, you know, because we start the 1st of August and go till the 31st of January?
Yeah, some of the opportunity that we didn't talk about as much today is that, because when we show permits, I'll go back to it, on buck deer, general season, What we show is 2017 permits and 2018 recommendation. So what we don't show, for example, the northern region, is that we were monitoring survival there and made a huge cut last year. When we saw that our fawn survival was 10% and that our adult survival was going to come in at 75%, we jumped ahead of that, made a big cut, so that post-season for 2017, it came in at 15, and then we can stay with 15. This year we've had great fawn survival, great adult survival. Average, slightly better than average, and we can withstand that again this year. So I guess I hope that answers your question. Yeah, we're always concerned about what the effects of hunting and how that is and maintaining and managing that into the future. And I wish sometimes that we showed maybe one more year of permit recommendations when we did the PowerPoint so that we could say, all right, so look at this. And there's some concern in the cache specifically of, hey, they were hit really hard last year. You know, when you're talking 10% fawn survival and when you drop down 75% adult survival, that's deer, that's pretty bad. But the fact that we came in at $15 per 100 does post-season really showed that the cut was appropriate. And that's where we were. So we have to take into account that too, Daniel.
Thank you.
Daniel, do you have another question?
No.
One more, Daniel, if you don't mind, just to illustrate that point. If we go to the southeastern region, you look at the San Juan there, clearly above, right? 24, 23, 22, or 23, and we're supposed to be managing that unit for 15 to 17. Why wouldn't we recommend an increase? I didn't say this at this rack because it's in the southeastern region, but the reason why is because, again, we're monitoring survival on this unit. Our fawn survival right now, we're learning that this unit is very dependent on monsoonal moisture. Our fawn survival on this unit right now is 13%. So with the light winter we've had, you would assume that we hadn't lost anything. But when we caught those fawns this fall, on average, they were 10 pounds lighter than the year before. They were coming in at 50 pounds instead of 60. And the survival has been very poor, so they didn't get that green up. They didn't get that monsoonal moisture. And that system isn't driven like the system in northern Utah by deep snows and those rough winters. It's driven by those August and September monsoons, July, August, September monsoons. So we do take into account survival and what's going on in that population when we make these recommendations.
I remembered my second one.
Okay.
We talked about the deer population 5 years ago. Could you tell me what that was, 2012?
Yeah, I can bring it up. Sorry.
Harvest.
I have that on the antlerless slide. Can you?
Is that 270?
270.
Roughly.
Yeah. 5 years ago.
Yeah, we had tremendous growth.
Ken, can you come up here to the mic?
Announce your name too.
Speaking of the mic.
Ken Hersey, Big Game Projects Leader. We kind of hit our bottom around 2011, 2012, with about 270,000. Since that time, we had really mild winters for like 4 years in a row. We had 85% adult survival to 90% adult survival, and we coupled that with Randy, he doesn't have it here, next. We also had like 70% fawn survival because of the light winters. And so we grew a lot of deer. These past 2 years, we had an average winter where we had a fawn survival drop into the 50-60 range, which is kind of normal. And then we had a severe winter where it dropped, cache, it dropped down to 10%. But statewide, it was like 30-some. So you know, that dropped the population these past couple years. But we had tremendous growth there for a while. And you know, I think we saw that with the growth of the buck doe ratio.
Well, and we saw it in the growth in harvest too, Ken.
Yeah,
I mean, frankly,
exactly.
we picked it up. Hunters picked it up.
Yeah, and that's why the hunting the past few years. I mean, these couple last couple, you know, you had that. Depending on what unit you hunted, you had to leave this past year. You didn't have yearlings on the cache. They didn't make it through. But we still had great buck doe ratios carryover and some older bucks. So, I don't know if that answers your question fully, but without pulling up the antlerless data particularly, it was around 270, and then it got up to a high of around 380,000. which is in that short of a period is incredible growth for Neildon.
Thank you. Last question would be is, when are you going to become a fortune teller so we know when to kill them all before they get killed?
Don't we all wish we knew the answer to that? I guess the answer to that is this. When you have them, harvest them. And harvest them at a rate that's not going to be biologically damaging, but offer that opportunity. Because if you don't, one day you might not have them, and Mother Nature will take them.
Thank you. Dan, did you have a question?
No, I don't.
Okay. Another question, Brother Rack. All right, we'll go into our comment period. I've got three comment cards. If anybody else would like to make a comment, please fill out one of these cards. My lovely assistant here is going to get his timer ready, and we'll give each person 3 minutes to state their comment. We'll go in this order. Ken Evans, I think yours is on this topic, and then Greg Bird, and then Troy Justison. Ken?
My name's Ken Evans. I work in the Book Cliffs. Lived in the area my whole life. I got to agree with Clint. He's got the deer population up in the Book Cliffs. This winter, I saw 4 4-points. The rest were 3 points and spikes. And that's all winter long. And I also lion hunt on my days off in the Book Cliffs. We've got the quantity in the Book Cliffs. We need to have maybe a management hunt like the Poncegon or the Henry's, 3-point or something. Because I'm seeing 35-inch 3-points. I can see them every day. Your average hunter is not going to shoot a 3-point. So, I mean, we got the quantity. He's got the buffalo up. I've seen the buffalo. I don't think his numbers are as low as he says. This winter out there lion hunting, I see more buffalo than you chase stick. I mean, and quality buffalo. He's done good there too. And in the roadless, I spend 2 weeks a year in the roadless. The buffalo quality's up out there. The deer and elk are in the tank. I think we need to have an unlimited predator hunt in the roadless. I've been out there since 1984, and the roadless is the worst I've ever seen as far as animals. So, but one thing we got to do is just get our youth involved. I asked 20 people to come to this rack meeting tonight, and they told me it doesn't do no good. We're not going to go. That's why the public feels. Just like Tim says, you talk to 100 people in the public, you know, you can ask Clint. I've talked to him in the Book Cliffs. I've dealt with him for 8-9 years, turned in stuff, whatever I could to help. I've done dedicated hunter projects, whatever I could to help. I'm not educated to be a biologist like them, but I'm telling you, on horseback, your numbers are not adding up to what you're posting. And that's all I got to say.
Okay. Thank you, Ken. Okay. Greg Bird?
Greg Bird, Utah Wild Sheep Foundation. We agree with all the recommendations the division has recommended for the sheep population, with the exception of the Wasatch, Nebo, Vanaquin combined unit this year. We would recommend there be no increase of tags and keep it to 2. Our fear is that the Wasatch units herself, being the Nebo, the Temp, and the Provo Face, has had disease issues for several years now. Population still rebuilding. With the increased tag, there would be the possibility of 6 grams coming off any one part of the unit. We just feel it could be detrimental to the struggling sheep population. So our recommendation would just be keep it at 2 tags, and because that Provo Face can be really susceptible if they're really struggling to find sheep on these tougher parts of the unit. All these sheep will just show right up above the Provo Temple in November when they rut, and every ram's right there. So it could really get over harvested, and then really kind of hurt our sheep program on that base right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate that comment. Troy, step up, state your name, and tell us how old you are.
To tell you how old I am, let me just put it this way. I need a colonoscopy. That tells you.
Stick around.
Young man, I ain't feeling so young. 50 years old today. So. Yeehaw. Troy Justinson, Sports and Fish and Wildlife. I appreciate y'all being here tonight and listening to us, and I appreciate the public coming here and the input. It's been an interesting discussion. envy the division being in this situation. It's a balancing act, and we appreciate all that you do. But as far as sportsmen and fish and wildlife go, we support the division's recommendations with the following exceptions. One of which is we agree with the Wild Sheep Foundation that we would ask that the division issue two tags on those units versus three, just for the simple possibility there could be six rams taken off that unit. Now, it's unlikely, but there is that potential, so we'd rather be cautious and just issue those two permits there. As far as general season deer units go, we would ask that because the manti is struggling, the south manti, the north manti is doing well, the south manti is struggling, we would ask that we cut 250 permits off the manti unit for the general deer. And pertaining to the Pine Valley, which is in the southern region, this is a unit that actually warrants what the division's recommending. Our only concern is this is a unit that they're instituting this new early rifle. That deer herd migrates upon pressure. Our local chapter members down there are a little concerned with this new early rifle being the first year that it could force the majority of those deer down low, and the harvest could be extremely high in the late hunt. So what they'd like to do is wait 1 year and just see what the effect of this new early rifle hunt has before they go ahead and issue the additional tags next year. Pertaining to elk, we would ask that the permit numbers stay the same on the Manti, the Fish Lake, and the Monroe, and not go with the recommended increase that the division's recommend. Once again, this is pertaining to trophy quality. The numbers show that the numbers the division recommend are adequate and justified. It's based upon our membership. They would like to see those numbers held back to see if they could bring up some of that quality. Pertaining to some of the discussion tonight, it's really the division can manage wildlife based upon what we want. I think we need to be careful what we want. I mean, you brought up changing the book lifts to 30 to 35. Been an outfitter for 30, 35 years. Seen a lot of awful big stuff hit the dirt. I have 22 points for deer. When we cut tags and we hire for manage for super quality, you're not going to hunt. Is that what we want? And that's something we need to really think about to ourselves. I have twin boys that are 16 in May. Took them on their first deer hunt last year, first time they drew a tag. He passed a couple of 2 points, and I left the choice to him. I trophy hunt, I'll admit that. And he says, you want to shoot him? Go ahead. And he said, Dad, I want to look for a bigger deer. Day come to go home, he's in tears, saying, Dad, I should have shot him. First deer. I think too much in the society today, and I'm as guilty as anybody in the profession I am, success is based upon a damn still tape. Man, we got to get out and hunt, make memories with our families. Yeah, I understand, wanting to kill, big stuff, whatever you type deal. But I remember as a kid going out, just the thrill of having a 2-point in camp. There's nothing wrong with that. So I think we need to be careful what we want. The key thing is we get out there, enjoy it with our families. We have the opportunity to harvest some game and things. And just think about it. But I appreciate y'all being here tonight, and thanks for the happy birthday wishes. Thank you.
Thank you, Troy. Any other comments, cards? All right, we'll go ahead and close the comment period then and come to the rack discussion. Covey, can we address a couple of these things that I've written down? What about the Wasatch Nebo sheep? What are the chances that all six of those get killed out of that same area?
Well, so what I can say that division wouldn't be opposed to that unit going from 3 to 2. 2 still keeps us within the plan. We can do that. The chance of that happening, not great. Could it happen? Sure. And that hunt's been open since 2014. With that, the sportsman's permit has harvested on that unit once, and the conservation permit has harvested on that unit once. It just happened to be the same year. So, but we understand the concern there, and if the sentiment is that they would like that to go from 3 to 2, we're still within the plan at 2, and we could support that.
Okay, thank you. What's the other racks done with the idea of the South Manti to cut a couple hundred tags out of that.
Yeah, and I also I can see the concern there. That the buck-doe ratio came in lower there this year, although we're within the guidelines, there is a downward trend. And I believe all racks have voted to reduce permit numbers on the Manti. Some by 200 and some by 250.
Okay. Another item there I heard was the Manti Fish Lake and Monroe Elk to keep those numbers the same. What's the division's opinion of that?
I don't think we could support that. Those are good recommendations, and the increase there is justified. Again, if you're waiting to draw a limited entry elk permit, we have to provide the opportunity where we can and still manage to what we've agreed to manage to with our public. It continually takes more points every year to draw those permits. And if we don't offer more opportunity in the units we can, when we can, where we can, it's just going to continue to increase.
Okay, thank you. Questions by the rack? Comments?
Randy, I have just one comment on the Bookcliff Bison tags. I appreciate the division's recognition of the situation out there right now with drought and other pressures on the range out there that we're trying to resolve. So I appreciate what they did on those numbers.
Thank you. Sounds like we've got some support there. Other comments by the rack?
Yeah. Well, never mind. That's in a different topic. Sorry.
What, Kobe, just by chance, what did the other units or the other regions do with the idea of the Manti Fish Lake and Monroe Elk keeping those numbers the same? What? How did they?
Oof. Well, you're asking a lot, Mr. Chair. I don't remember exactly what every rack did. I think the one they took into consideration more than the others. It depends. If you're on the Southern Region rack, obviously the Monroe and the Fish Lake were of concern. If you're on the Central Region rack, so it just depended on the rack and what their concerns were. But
was the Southern Region concerned?
What happened in the Southern Region, Mike? Would you like to step up and read that?
Yes, I'm Mike Wardle. I'm a private lands public wildlife coordinator. In the Southern Region, for elk, they made a recommendation to not increase Monroe bull elk tags. But they didn't do anything on the Fish Lake.
Only the Monroe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So it just varied by rack, but yeah. Again, what I can tell you is we have the ability to offer the opportunity.
Thank you. All right. Discussion by the rack. Rebecca, it's your first time. Okay. All right. Any discussion? If I'd entertain a motion, I think we probably ought to. If we're going to make a motion on the Wasatch Nebo sheep, let's discuss that action item first. Does anybody want to make a motion on that?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we leave the tags at 2 on that Nebo sheep unit.
Brad Horks made the motion to leave the tags at 2, which is what it is today or has been on the Wasatch Nebo sheep. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Richie Anderson had a second on that. Discussion? All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 in favor, opposed?
I'm with you guys on this, but I feel kind of funny voting on that where I don't even know where this place is.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll count you in favor of it. Unanimous. Thanks, Tim. Oh, it is kind of hard sometimes, but when we have folks in our region going to other regions and stuff, that's kind of why they want us to.
Yeah, I kind of feel uncomfortable because I don't even know where the place is at, and I don't know what kind of problems they have there.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. See, the next thing we're talking about is on the South Manti to cut tags by 200 is what the proposal was by for the SFW, the general season only. Let's talk about that. Do we want to entertain a motion to either to even approach that topic?
Go ahead.
All right, Dan?
Yeah, I would go ahead and make a motion that that this rack here, I guess, propose that the 200 tag reduction from what is being proposed by the division, which I understand is consistent with the other, what, five racks statewide?
Four.
Four racks statewide?
I'll second that motion.
All right. That's on the South Manti. We've got a motion and a second discussion. Bring it to a vote. All in favor?
Well, hold on one sec, Randy. Is that based upon buck-to-doe ratios on the decline? Is that the reason for that? SFW.
That's what I'm seeing, Joe. Yeah.
As well, and it seemed like as well as the expected drought conditions in that part of the state.
Yeah, it looks like the buck-to-doe ratio came in at 13.3. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. And that's one of those that we had a reduction last year as we came in and. Anyway, we can understand the concern there. Well.
You good, Joe?
Yes.
All right, we'll call that to a vote. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 in favor. Joe?
I don't know how to vote.
Are you opposed?
I'm not necessarily opposed, but I don't know how to vote. I'm not familiar with landowners in the area. And do they have problems with wintertime, deer in the haystacks, those kind of things? I don't know how to vote. I'm going to abstain.
One abstention. Nine and one abstention. We just voted on the South Manti deer. Okay, let's talk about the Manti Fish Lake Monroe elk units. Does anybody have any heartburn there about doing anything with those, any one of those three units? As far as the elk, the proposal from SFW was to keep the numbers the same. Sounds like some of the racks, at least the southeast region, they had on the Monroe, I think it was, to keep. That is the 2017 numbers.
That was on the Southern said 250.
Southern said 250. Do we have anyone here have any heartburn to do anything with that one?
Could you go over the numbers again on that? We're trying to get them found here again, if you wouldn't mind, and what recommendation was there.
Can you do that, Kobe, for us? Recommendations for the elk on the Manti Fish Lake in Monroe.
Yeah, we can go over that right now. The Monroe, we're still at an average of 7.3 years old. This is one of the units that we reduced in age objective in the last plan. We know we had a slight drop in the last year, but that you have to look at the average on elk sometimes because consistency issues. So we're still well above. We know we have a surplus of bulls there, and we know as we come into a lower age objective, which we were at a higher age objective, we have the ability to offer some opportunity there. That's for the Monroe.
That Monroe was three tags. He was going to increase?
37 to 40.
Yep. On the Central Mountains Manti, we have been at the very top of this age objective for years. And this recommended increase from 467 to 480, we also, there was some concern about putting the majority of those in the regular rifle. And so we reallocated the tags in this recommendation. And the majority of this increase will go into that mid-season, that new mid-season that we implemented on. And it's not as high a success, and they often don't kill as many of the older age class bulls. So that on the Manti, and then on the Plateau Fish Lake, again, we manage these for 5.5 to 6, and we have come in at the top of that year after year after year and have the ability to offer that opportunity.
Thank you. Yeah. Looking at that, the one that gives me the heartburn, I guess, would be the Monroe.
We should take the 9 months.
That's
so mad at that. Take it down to 20.
All right, discussion? Anybody want to make a motion on any one of those three? If you do, maybe one at a time, one unit at a time.
Yeah, I'll make a motion. Do you want to handle them one at a time then?
Well,
my motion would be to keep all three of those numbers as proposed by the division.
So that would just fall under the regular regular motion.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, how about making that motion then?
Yeah. Okay. I'll go ahead and make that motion that those three units we just discussed stay the same as proposed by the division.
What have the other units, racks, done on those? Do you know what the recommendations were on the other racks again? I'm sorry.
We got them right here.
They were all over the place. Some stayed the same as last year. Some went with the increase. And that's the long of the short.
The southern region stayed at 37 for Monroe.
The southern region stayed with Fish Lake and Manti. They wanted there was a recommendation for an increase, but it lacked a second, so it failed. It motion passed to increase, to go with the division's recommendations. And then they passed the remainder of the, they just passed the rest of the recommendations as presented.
I think if we don't want to change the division's recommendation, we just drop it. If we want to change it, let's go ahead and make a motion. But if we want to go with the division's recommendation, it'll just fall into the overall bucket of the rest of it.
Strike that from the record.
So I can see their concern on the Monroe. It sounds like three tags, but you're talking about 1,000 head of elk. You know, so three tags in that population can be, right? So
and most of that was because of the last year went from 7.5 to 6.4. Is that probably most of the reason for that?
And sometimes with elk we see that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, look at...
And that's harvest data, right?
That's aged teeth from harvested.
From harvest, so...
Yeah.
You take everything that was harvested and average that out to be the 6.4.
All of the teeth that were turned in. Yes.
And they're mandatory to turn in, correct? Should be.
Right? We don't...
I've hunted those units before, so, and I've always had to turn my teeth in.
We don't get them all returned, but we age all the ones that we get back.
And they get their hands slapped for not turning in teeth?
You don't get to put in next year.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that.
You have to wait 5 years anyway. Mr. Chair, I'd like to make the recommendation that we go ahead and lower the Monroe unit by the three tags that was increased. Leave the other two units the same.
leave the other two units as the division is proposed, and lower the Monroe to what the 2017 numbers were.
Yeah. Can you switch back to the Monroe?
The Monroe.
So 15 and 16 were really above objective, by the way.
Down to 6.4, whatever concerns me.
Yeah.
And you do that another year in a row, you're upside down.
Now you're below the objective. Your average is 7.3.
Yeah. Motion.
We had a motion. Do we have a second on that? Not going once, twice.
I'll second it.
All right, Joe Batty made a second on that. Any discussion?
Let's move this meeting along.
All right, all those in favor, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5. This isn't looking good. All those opposed, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4.
I abstain.
4. You're a good guy, Tim. All right, so we had 5 in favor, 4 opposed, and 1 abstain. And you abstained for?
For the reasons that I gave before.
You're not comfortable with it.
Right.
All right.
I don't even know where this country is.
Spider bowl country.
Okay.
I have no idea.
I don't get a vote unless we're a tie. So
you
did.
Not all that either.
You guys did good. So with that motion passing, do I have a motion to accept the balance of the plan?
I got one thing I'd like to discuss, Mr. Chairman, if that's all right.
Okay.
Should have brought this up earlier. Sorry. Look at this as well. Kicking the dead horse, right? The Book Cliffs, a lot of feedback down there is that the age class down there has dropped. It's dropped one of the most significant between all the units that it's compared to. Yet we're kind of overlooking that because there was no recommendation to increase. Several fellow hunters, sportsmen in this area hunted that last year, and I'm out there with the rest of them too, and it's everyone feels they're seeing the effects of the spike hunt, the increased success in that, driving that age objective a little bit lower, then to actually see the data for 2017 to quantify that, it worries me a little bit.
Now the spike teeth aren't including in this. This is just a limited entry, folks, that was in this, correct?
Yeah, I mean, with the spike, you're obviously harvesting a yearling bull.
Right, so this is just a limited entry folks that in this case shot some younger bulls as compared to the last 2 years, by a year and a half.
Yeah, the age definitely, I mean, it went down on aged bulls.
So in the stance I'm in, I don't want to take away opportunity either. But the backyard that everybody desires in this area, I think it's necessary. So I'd like to make a motion that the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek unit be reduced by 13 permits to 150 for 2018.
I'll second that.
Discussion on that. We've got a motion to lower the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek to 150 tags.
Who did it?
Daniel Davis made the motion. Brad Horrocks had the second.
To 150 tags.
To 150 tags, which is a reduction of 13.
How far are we under objective on our elk herd out there? Where are we at on our objective for the elk herd?
What was the last light on the Book Cliffs?
The last flight was Clint Sampson, wildlife biologist. The last flight was in 2016, and I got it right here, the breakdown. Basically, we're hovering right around that 6,000 head mark as far as population estimate. Our objective is 7,500 head of elk for that. And then our flight, where is it? Man, I just saw it. Okay. When we flew in 2016, we estimated population then around 5,600 elk. And then this year with our computer models, we estimated around 6,000. So is that
the objective was 7,500.
7,500, yep. So we're below that. We issue, it'll come up in the antler list, probably all together with landowner tags and the public draw permits for the roadless and the Bitter Creek. We're probably killing a total of around 100, maybe 120 cow elk a year, population down. But some of those hunts are set up for deer winter range to try and move those elk across the landscape and to try to help our deer herd out a little bit. And then we do issue several landowner tags to, like always, help compensate for damage.
Thank you, Clint.
Clint, that was my question. And it's only 13 tags, but how do you feel like the elk affect the deer herd if we're 1,500 under objective on population, but we're 7,000 under on deer objective population-wise? I mean, I know it's only 13 tags, but it seems like they compete a little bit. Does that concern you, taking 13 tags away?
13 tags? No, you know, it doesn't. I don't think it's too alarming. Like I say, it's just getting harder and harder to draw tags out there, you know, better than most. The big dip, I think, in the age comes down to, if you look at hunt by hunt, you break out that late season, that November rifle bull elk tag last year, that's where we took the hit.
Age class? Age,
yep.
5-year-olds?
It was tough. It was a tough year. Extremely dry. I've never seen it that dry before. I think that made it really, really difficult for hunters. Elk behavior, usually that time of year, you can find bachelor herds of bulls and, you know, the number of 7 to 7, sometimes more than that. And I don't think they were doing that. I talked to a lot of guys that were killing bulls that were still in with cows. And, you know, I think the elk overall are kind of changed. There's more and more elk living down in the deserts, too, and I don't think a lot of people look there. And so I think that late season hunt is what drove that down. But, I mean, look, year before, 2016, it was almost 8-year-old bulls, you know, killed out there on average. And if we were going to see huge impacts from the spike hunt, we would have seen it back in 2015. And so, like I say, it did decline. That's why, you know, we didn't recommend it increase. But like I say, I think you could go 13 tags either way and still be okay.
Thank you, Clint. Other comments, discussion on this? Motion is to reduce it by 13 to 150 tags in Bitter Creek. Another discussion?
I've got just a comment, Randy. I think, you know, I think I would support it if the trend was going the wrong way as far as elk population. If it was decreasing rather than increasing, I think I could support it. But with drought conditions and range conditions and some outside pressure we have on the range right now, like I say, if the population count was going the other direction, I think I could support that. But the population count's trending in the right direction, and until we can get some of the other pressures on the range taken care of, I would not support it right now.
Thank you, Richie. And Joe, I think I saw your hand down there.
I was going to say about the same as Mr. Anderson has. Until there's some improvement in the range conditions and some of these other factors that he's talking about, the range out there is not going to... I just assume the hunters killed the elk, then they were killed by depredation.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Other comments? Well, we've had a motion and a second. We'll bring that to vote. All those in favor of the Bitter Creek area elk be reduced by 13 tags to 150, raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five. Five in favor. Opposed? One, two, three, four, five.
Wrestled. There you go. Here's your chance.
I guess.
Mr. Chair, you can break.
You know, I'm going to.
Your face is red.
The people's going to like you in half an hour.
I know. Most of the people don't like me. That's a problem. I think if I've got to vote, I've got to go with the division on this and leave them at 163. So that's my my vote. So it'd be 6-5. And don't do that to me again, guys. All right. Other comments, discussion on this one before we bring it to a vote. The overall. Well, I'll entertain a motion to approve the balance of the Bucks, Bulls, and Once in a Lifetime permit recommendations for 18.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and make a motion that we just go with the remaining numbers as proposed here, as the division is proposed from here today. So,
we got a motion to approve the balance. Do I have a second?
I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Rebecca. Rebecca Jones seconded that motion. Any discussion? All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
I opposed.
And one opposed. Okay. We got through that, Covey. Thank you. We've got the next one up is Covey again, but let's take 10 minutes. We'll convene till 9 o'clock, and we'll start precisely at 9 o'clock. Yes.
I'm late.
You want out?
The Bulls are late.
Drinking.
That's good. That means
we're getting good. We're getting good.
That's right. Good discussion.
Yeah. That always mean.
Yeah. Always do. Just throw them around. Lean with them. How you doing, Mr. Brad?
Good. How you been, anyway?
How's life treating you?
Oh, hey. I had life good
till I
thank you.
Hopefully you can help make a change. I think that's why you're right. I was like, I hope I can make
it. Oh, is that how it was?
For someone who has done this for
35 years?
Almost 30 years, you know. You're not missing a thing, buddy.
No, my wife is very high.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you for coming.
Good to see you. Good to see you.
Well, you're still here, though.
Well,
are you
going to
check out?
I'm going to check out. Half the time I was up there, some nice.
Almost. You can feel it, huh? Your arm was jumping up there.
Well,
I didn't know you were on your, you know, series that you've been on your ride.
Really?
This has nothing to do with the movie.
Well, there's probably four or five out of 100 since I got hired for it. Now, I'm involved with it.
Are you guys ever looking for help? My son's a biologist, so I'm just curious.
We do volunteers, seasonals. The biggest thing is getting on USA Jobs.
That's where he's been.
That one gave me a slip.
He's had a lot of people calling, but not.
We take this picture.
Yeah, Oregon, Washington, Oregon, wildlife jobs.
And I tell you what, you're a strong fish.
Stuff like that.
And that's but, it's. It's tough. I mean, probably.
How do you get on?
Somebody. There was a lot of guys who got what he does, they still don't have some question. We need to delete this one. He's trying to SS. I can't do that now. Can I do that in 6 months? Can I learn to do that in 6 months? I say yes. He has to mark this because of exit. What? I heard my name.
We didn't say nothing.
I heard my name. Not if it's coming from her.
He's being very humble and like, I don't know how to do anything.
I'm
the best.
I ask her how she feels about cranes.
I did down there a week ago.
I had a long guy come over.
I was like, I need you on my side.
6 months? Yeah.
Yes.
You're an expert.
Do you want to do that?
No. You're an expert.
Let him get hired. And then.
That's the dream. You have to work yourself in. Now, it's tough because sometimes I struggle because I have to do it. I just want to do it. I feel too humble.
I already know the kind of person I know.
That's hard. Well, that's good.
So the we need to keep these two separated.
So who's in the way?
Natasha.
We sat by each other once, right?
Yeah, I just won. That's all it took, guy. You're thinking of Melissa Fuller.
Melissa Fuller.
Well, I wanted to make that change during the last meeting, but they didn't, you know. That would have looked bad.
I had to try to start moving.
That's why she left. Mine, it wasn't because
I probably won't sit down. I'm in your
way. No, I'm right there, so I can sit down when I want to. It feels good to stand up for a moment.
Yeah.
Oh,
I put you in a rough spot.
Starvation.
You never usually have to do that, so.
What is it?
Walleye.
Oh, wow.
What on your side?
I had a bunch of it in there, but I cheated to use a nap. I'm working with my robotics guys. I was out there, as I said, yesterday. And this is one of the females that we caught. And we caught a whole bunch of put them in there. We catch them in these nets.
That's what we need
put
to have.
Put them in there, and then we collect the data.
Of course, we talked about that last year. You about having about
horse hunt. Chance we get to a dead one, we take it. Weigh the egg mass. We also try to identify how many eggs she's carrying.
Yeah.
And what we want to do down the road is use this as a source. These fish live long, and we take them and turn them all into fryer and let them go.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Hi, Jay, how are you? I know. I guess I could, you know, call you when I'm going to go grocery shopping, say, let's meet somewhere besides the rack.
Yeah, almost too good. Because we've got
oh, dear.
A lot of food.
somebody would say they didn't think this meeting would last very long, and I said, I never say that anymore. After we had that pro meeting, and I thought that would be like an hour meeting, and it turned out like this one.
That'd be fun. That 1 year's old, and how much is different?
I don't know. They tell me in the Rams. I look at that and I go, okay, it was heavier than the last one. And that's about it.
Haven't quite got the metric conversion.
If I was still living in Canada, they do Rams meters and things like that up there. We moved away from that about the time that started. Because we used to do
it may not be a bad idea. It's okay, Brad. I can walk there. It actually will wake me up.
We'll show you.
It'll wake me up.
He's still cussing. It was so long ago. I can't even remember it.
Yeah, I would not have a hard time. They sure was gonna. They're just gonna push us to do it for a while.
Yeah.
Rory, can you whistle? Tell those guys out there we're starting in 30 seconds. All right. Thank you.
The rest of the world does. That doesn't mean we have.
All right, what happened with this person?
Lewis, that was the rep. They changed it.
Oh. All right, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I hope I didn't think either.
I still have this one on there on my
spine.
Yeah, this is fun. Yeah.
I'm just learning the ropes.
I'm tired.
I said it before, I'll say it again. I can sit and listen to her talk for hours. She's got this soothing.
Yeah. My mom called me at 3:30 this morning, and she was having some problems. Right.
Well, we know the new chair.
She's from, Minnesota. Here we go. She's from Minnesota.
Where is that?
She's got a little Canadian going on there.
She's got a little Canadian there, too.
Okay,
that a girl.
All right, we'll go ahead and get started. We're about 2 minutes past. So, Kobe, we'll turn the time to you to do the presentation on the Antlers Permit Recommendations for 2018.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, on to the 2018 Antlers Permit Recommendation.
Sorry about that.
So we'll start with deer. But it's been pointed out at most racks, and I think I should point it out here probably that this is one of my favorite photos. I think it's really neat photo, but say this is how the division counts deer.
There's four of them there.
Well, that's four.
Well, one of them's a buck.
All right, back to fawn production trends. We talked about this earlier. You know, west-wide, this hovers about 60%, and that's what we like to see for a good, healthy population. In the last 2 years, we've been right about there. We are slightly below, but right about 60%. If we look at statewide deer survival rates, so remember that this data goes January to January, so this is actually... Thanks, Clint. This is actually last year's data.
Love one, but I'm dying.
Sure.
So this is the survival.
I'm drinking my sugar.
Sorry, I lost my concentration for some of the cookies. But I am glad that we have the cookies.
Nope.
Wait.
Maybe we could get you to start over.
Should we do that again?
I think we got lost.
Okay.
Cookies got involved.
We can start with the deer photo. Fair enough.
Boy. Thank you.
Okay. Has everybody got a cookie? Okay. Let's move on. So again, we talked about this earlier, looking at farm production trends. We're hovering right around that 60 fawns per 100 does, which is where we want to be. Looking at statewide deer survival rates, and this is what we saw last year with the harsh winter. Fawn survival really took a hit, just over 30%. And then we also saw adult survival drop to, you know, just above about 75%. Our statewide deer population estimate, we hit a peak 2 years ago at that 384,000. And with two moderate and then a more severe winter, dropped a little bit there, and we're down now about 300. The modeled estimate is 363,000. So just to explain the graph, on the left of the y-axis, you have the number, and then the x-axis across the bottom are the years from 1993 into 2017. And when we're looking at models, remember a couple things. One, models are great to show trend over time, but the exact number is less important. What we know is that the population declined over the last 2 years. Here's an overall look at the trend in antlerless deer permits for the division recommendation since 2010. And in 2018, we're recommending 1,955 permits. And we'll break that out by unit and talk a little bit about what those permits are for and why we recommend those. So as a reminder, there's a couple reasons for antlerless deer permits, and I think it's important to keep this in mind as we go throughout what the new permits are and what permit recommendations we're making. So antlerless deer hunts are designed to do a few things. One, address deer population health. Right? We're talking deer herd health. So when we go out and catch in December, we assess body condition. Okay? And when we assess body condition, we take certain measurements that correlates back to a study that was done, and that study will tell us percent body fat on the animal. So as we watch a population grow or increase or decrease, we can see how the density of that population in the unit is affected. Just as an example, the cache was highly impacted the winter before this, and they lost a lot of their fawns and a lot of their adults. When we went back there in 2017 and caught those animals in December, they were the fattest deer we'd ever caught. So we see them drop down in population and increase in herd health. And that sometimes is a reason for an antlerless deer hunt. That's one reason. Another reason for an antlerless deer hunt is to address depredation issues. And when we say address depredation issues, you know, we've said for a long time, and we mean this, that we don't want to grow deer on the backs of private landowners that don't want them. And in the same breath, it shouldn't be just the private landowner's responsibility to remove all those animals or the division's responsibility to do that. When we can offer public opportunity and allow them to help remove some of those animals, we want to do that. And finally, we do have areas where we have some rangeland concerns. And so where we have rangeland concerns, we will reduce that population to allow the range again to come back. And then in the long run, we end up with more deer over time. So with that in mind, there are two new hunts in the northern region. If you look at the left, we've got the region and the unit. If there are any permits recommended for 2017, the number there, and then the number recommended for 2018. So in the northern region, on the Chalk Creek and East Canyon, both of these units are comprised primarily of private land, and these permits are intended to address depredation issues there. If we go down to the southeastern region on the 9 Mile, there are actually two hunts there. One is in the Green River Valley to address depredation there, and then the other one is right in and around the town of Price to address some urban issues and depredation. On the San Juan, the boundary for that hunt. One more thing, I do have all of these maps at the end of the presentation. If anybody has a question about a boundary, we can look at those. On the San Juan, the boundary for that hunt is actually the town of Monticello. It's recommended as an archery hunt to address some urban deer issues there and allow some opportunity. On Wasatch Mountains West, we did have a fire up Sheep Creek on some winter range, and this boundary will help reduce that population and allow that winter range to recover. And then in the Oak Ridge Stansberries, these are both range depredation concerns and some deer herd health concerns as well on that one, at those 50 permits. We're recommending a reduction in permits on the Monroe, the Panguitch Lake, and the Plateau Boulder, and then an increase in permits on the Pine Valley, where we have some serious depredation issues in that area. And recommending a new hunt there on the Southwest Desert, that's in and around the town of Garrison, to deal with some depredation issues there as well. On to antlerless elk. We'll start out by looking at statewide population trends. So on the y-axis, we have the number of elk in the state, and then across the x-axis are the bottom, or the years. And so if we look at this graph, we know that we grew some elk this last year, and there are some reasons for that. When we redid the statewide elk plan, it was highly focused on addressing conflict. So one of the tools in the statewide elk plan, we'll go through this, were the private lands only permits. And what those allowed a private landowner to do is when he had elk coming into a haystack, a field where he didn't want them, in areas where they have these private lands only permits, he could then allow friends, family, whoever wanted to go get a permit and harvest an animal, remove that animal, apply pressure, and do that. The issue is that all these tools and permits, they're all based around having that conflict. We had a very open winter. In January, we were catching elk at 10,000 feet on the Wasatch. We just didn't have them come down into winter range this year. And we had poor success because of that. So this is a preview of what permits have looked like over the last several years for antlerless elk. In 2013 is when the antlerless elk population, or when the elk population peaked in the state of Utah. And it's also when we peaked with antlerless elk permits. And we learned a few things here. We learned that just throwing more permits at this didn't help us reduce the population. We were continuing to grow. And we weren't getting, a great return on our investment. We were redistributing elk in a manner that made them unavailable to the public. So as you come down into the latter years, you'll see that we reduced permits. But then the blue line, in addition to on the last 2 years, those are the private lands only permits that we offer. So what this has done, it's allowed us to manage elk on units where we were getting that skewed distribution where we had a majority of the elk spending more time on private land, use that as a management tool to then redistribute those animals and put them back on public land or areas where we didn't have the conflict. And honestly, it's worked well. So we're recommending a total of 10,090 antlerless elk permits that would go through the draw, and we'll go through that by unit. And in addition to that, 9,100 private lands only permits. So here are the public draw permits by region. On the left, you have the unit, followed by the population objective, the population estimate, the number of permits in 2017, and the 2018 recommended permits. And when we're looking at these northern region permits, in the northern region, it's the only region in the state where we are over objective for elk. And there are a couple of reasons for this, but the primary reason is that the majority of these units have a lot of private land. And with that come a lot of CWMUs and a lot of trials and management. So when we look at these permits, remember that these aren't the only permits that are going towards antlerless elk in those units. A lot of these have the private lands only permits. And then in addition to that, they have CWMUs that are also helping harvest that and get back to that population objective. We'll just go through the units that are either increasing or decreasing. On the cache, recommending an increase there. Morgan South Ridge, also recommending an increase. East Canyon, we're recommending a slight increase there, as well as the Camas. for an overall increase in antlers permits in the northern region and a few new hunts. That microphone is my way. But the Cache Richmond Hyde Park, Cache Ridge, and North Slope Summit are the new hunts that we're recommending there. In the center region, where we're over objective on the Nebo, we're recommending an increase in permits there, as well as a very slight increase on the Wasatch Mountains West. Public draw permits in the northeastern region. We're recommending decreases on the South Slope Diamond Mountain and on the Book Cliffs, along with an increase on the 9 Mile Anthro. In the southeastern region, recommending an increase. We've got a very small population of elk on the San Rafael, recommending an increase to those permits, as well as an increase on the La Salles and the San Juan. And a slight just decrease of 10 permits on the Central Mountains Manti, where we're well below the population objective. In the southern region, recommending we'll go through decreases, recommending decreases on the Southwest Desert, Mount Dutton, Plateau Fish Lake Thousand Lakes, the Zion, and the Pine Valley. And we're recommending increases on the Fillmore, Monroe, and the Panguitch Lake. There is a new hunt in the southern region on the Monroe. And this hunt it's designed around an aspen treatment the Forest Service did, and it's trying to protect that treatment. This is just describing some of what I've said before, and that there are a couple types of over-the-counter permits. So not everything goes through the draw for antlerless elk. One is an antlerless elk control permit. And on these, you may take one antlerless elk using the same weapon type during the same season dates and within the areas of overlap between the boundary of the buck, bull, or once-in-a-lifetime permit and the antlerless elk control permit. And these are great on units like the West Desert Vernon, the Henrys, and some of those units where our antlerless elk permit as well and harvest an elk there. And then the private lands only permits that we've mentioned before. Here we have the season dates, and it's a long liberal season date. And the rationale behind that is because these permits are designed to help address conflict, and we don't know when that's going to occur. So from August 1st to January 31st. We always get asked when these permits go on sale, and that's July 26th this year. To look at the antlerless elk control permits that we've had. Last year we had it on 12 units. We sold 4,410 permits with 474 elk harvested. Now that's just this type of permit, just the antlerless elk control permits. And remember, the primary objective of a lot of these hunters is to harvest their buck or their bull while they're out. We did get an 11% success rate. For this year, we're recommending it on the following 10 units. For the private lands only permits, this last year we sold 3,100 of these permits, 3,182, and harvested 715 elk. And I think the interesting thing about this slide is that that's only a 22% success rate on this open winter. The previous year, we sold a similar number of permits, you know, right in that 3,000 mark, and the success rate was double, it was 44%. So when we had the conflict, it all worked well. They've been well received by landowners and hunters. They simplified obtaining permits to harvest cows on private lands and minimized depredation. And they've also proven to redistribute elk on the landscape. And here are the permit recommendations for those by unit.
Colby?
Yes.
Back up two slides that shows this region, more of this region.
Yeah,
right? There you go. Thank you.
Thanks, Boyd. You gave me a chance to get a drink. So to summarize, providing tools to better manage elk by recommending public draw permits in combination with private lands only permits and antlers elk control permits on units where that tool is beneficial. On the pronghorn, just a very slight increase in pronghorn. Last year in 2017, look at the bar graph there. We recommended 750, and we're just recommending to increase that by 10. There are some hunts that are going down, some that are going up. We'll go through those and some new hunts. So look at that by unit. Unit on the left, all by the 2017 recommendations, and then the 2017 permits and 2018 recommendations. On the box elder, recommending a reduction in permits there, along with the cash, recommending a reduction in permits there. Recommending a reduction in permits on the Parker Mountain, and on the Southwest Desert and Milford Flat. Recommending increasing permits on the Santa Rafael North. There's a population there that when we flew it, we were over objective there and trying to get that back into what we've agreed to. And we have a population of pronghorn there on the Fillmore Oak Creek South we need to manage as well, recommending a new hunt there. And that's what is that overall net increase. So the two new hunts, Santa Fe North, Mounds Reef, and the Fillmore Oak Creek South. On to antlerless moose. Moose came into the state about the turn of the century. So before that, there weren't documented moose in the state. They came into the state in the early 1900s. By the mid to late 50s, we had enough moose to start to manage as a wildlife agency. We started to fly moose, monitor populations, and see exactly what they were doing. And over that time, monitoring moose, we saw two big crashes. And until more recently, we had some ideas what drove that and what the rationale behind that was, but we didn't know exactly. And we're just finishing a really good study that we did with Utah State that shows that moose. Moose show some effects from density dependence, which means you get too many moose in an area, body condition goes down, they're more susceptible to disease and other things that they're already susceptible to, and you end up with a big die-off. So our moose populations get high, and then they crash. They get high, and then they crash. And as a wildlife management agency, what we like to see is managing, without conflict, the optimal number of animals we can on the landscape without doing damage to the landscape. And so that's the rationale behind antlerless moose permits. With that in mind, we're recommending a slight increase in antlerless moose permits on the Ogden. And then when we went out on the north slope this last year and caught moose, we saw that those animals had really, really poor body condition. And so we're recommending 10 permits there as well, and that's a new hunt. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Kobe, go back to that last slide. Help me understand that 10. They had really poor body conditions, which means they were overgrazing the habitat. Is that what you're thinking?
So it means they're starting to show some density dependence. It means that they're starting there. The numbers are probably too high for what that amount of area can sustain. And so moose are really susceptible. And our concern is always trying to stay ahead of the game. And sometimes we're late. There's a concern that when you have a year where you have a really open year, a lot of soil contact, and followed by next year, if we have a moderate to heavy year with a lot of snow, we could end up with moose get winter tick disease. I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen that. You see a moose lay down, it stands up, and you see the bed it's laid down in looks like it was almost shot with a shotgun. It's just covered in blood from all the ticks that are on it. And that's just one of the diseases they get. I mean, they're not bighorn sheep, right? But they're close. So they get a lot of different diseases. Well, so when you have really poor body condition and couple that with a light winter, light winters aren't always good for moose. A light winter followed by a moderate to heavy winter, you can have a pretty good die-off. And so what we try to do is reduce densities, and then manage more flat. Instead of letting Mother Nature adjust that for us, we try to not lose them all to Mother Nature. But yeah, when we caught, they were in poor body condition, and we're concerned about that area.
Okay, thank you.
I know before that I'd mentioned that that I would show some of the cause-specific mortality. I don't know if it would be appropriate to do that, Randy, now, or if you'd want to see some of that later, maybe.
Later, maybe.
Okay.
All right, question by the rack. Any questions for Covey on this?
I've got a couple of questions, yeah. Could you go to, like, your first slide, Covey, in this presentation? I think it was a statewide deer population estimate slide.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one there. And I don't know how far back that, you know, it goes back, that graph goes back to 1993, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
The population estimate of 453,000 deer.
What? Where is that at? Oh, I'm looking. So that's the objective.
Yeah, your population objective of 453,000 deer, mm-hmm. dating back 25 years, at least on that slide right there, and I don't know if it goes back further than that. I'm just curious, has the division ever reconsidered bringing that population objective down? I mean, is that a realistic population objective going into the future?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. That number is not what it has always been. It was set lower in the last, but every time we redo a unit plan, so we take a look at that and say, is this the appropriate level for this unit? Could we grow more? How would we grow more? What would we do? What are the limiting factors? Is it obtainable? Actually, I would hope so one day, but we fight a pretty good fight on habitat and other things, and are there areas in the state where we could improve and do more acres and more habitat? Sure. We do evaluate that, though, every time we write a herd unit plan, which is every 5 years.
Right. So that's been evaluated like five times, and I'm just curious why it's still that high, and I just wonder if it's really achievable, and... that's just a question I had. I don't know if maybe somebody here in the region would want to address that question.
As Kobe said, Randall Thacker, Wildlife Biologist. As Kobe mentioned, we do change these, and we have unit plans. This is basically, the total is an accumulation of all the unit plans across the state. Each unit plan, as we go through those every on a five-year rotating basis. I was just going to mention, you know, in our region, we did our plan seats just a year and a half ago. We updated our plans, and we actually increased our objectives on a number of our units out here, because at the time, that's right before that hard winter, and we'd had five nice winters in a row, and we had really produced a lot of deer. You can see the growth curve going up and up with the population growth, and a number of our units were hitting the population objective, which if we're going to manage to an objective, that would mean we would then have to start having unit-wide type of doe hunts to remove does. We felt the habitat was there to support them if we continued to have mild winters. When we get our really bad winters that we do get here every once in a while, like we did last year, nature controls that real easy on deer. Yeah, I mean, they really do. It nature drives deer populations that way, and that's what we saw. And so, yeah, part of that increase there, why it is up where it is from our region.
Mm-hmm.
You were here at those RAC meetings, you know, in those meetings when we did those and increased them. So that we didn't have to start limiting, you know, deer on the mountain and that kind of thing that way because of a population objective that had been set low. So, yeah, there is definitely potential when we get away from these hard winters. Our population here in the region definitely increases. We see it consistently. And having, you know, mild winters is beneficial to us. So, yeah, I think as far as maybe not statewide. I know I can only speak to our region.
Mm-hmm. We'll
get a lot closer to that after without, you know, one bad winter brought us down a lot farther from where we were.
So I see.
It'll do that cycle.
And then just the other question I had is, at one point, I know this region had a doe pronghorn hunt up on the Lucerne Peninsula. What happened to that hunt? Why has that kind of gone away? And when did it go away?
Amy Vandewert, wildlife biologist. I stopped doing that hunt 2 years ago. When we were having that hunt, it was more to get rid of some of the does in the area. And the past couple of years when we had it, the does weren't there anymore. They were just getting pushed down where they can't be hunted around the campground. And there is very few does during that hunt.
Thank you.
Other questions by the rack? Okay, how about questions by the public? Any questions? Yep.
Hi, Rel. Hey, Bigman. You were saying something about showing the maps for the Green River
9 mile.
Oh, yeah. Would you like to see those?
If you wouldn't mind, please.
This is the 9 mile Green River Valley boundary. Is that
so with these 40 permits, they're only going to be able to hunt in that unit and the other one? 20 in that one and 20 in the other one?
20 in each, that's correct.
All right, and then my other question was on the antlerless elk. With the 9 mile anthro and the 9 mile range creek, why is there such a difference in the population objective? From 700 on one to 1,800 on the other one, where they're that close.
Eric, do you want to talk about that?
Derek Ewell with the Utah Division of Wildlife. Got a question tonight. I'm pretty excited about it. Can you hear me okay?
You guys can't see his face. I can.
To answer your question, so if you look at the two units, so that you got the anthro and the range creek. The range creek is larger, and it has far more acres of summer range. It's got a lot more aspen. It's a lot more higher elevation stuff, whereas on the anthro, it's pretty narrow band of summer range. And so that's the difference in the population objectives. And those, you know, when we set those population objectives, it goes through the big process, kind of like the statewide plans, where we have all the interested parties there in a meeting, and for several meetings, and it goes on for months, and in the anthro's case, for years. And that's the number that we came up with that we could settle on with all the grazing, private land owners, and, you know, sportsmen, everybody. That was the number we could come up with. And on the Range Creek, where they had the similar meetings, they came up with their number. So that's why there's the difference in the two.
I just wasn't sure where they've got Cedar Ridge locked out, why it's so much of a difference with that much ground that's locked out.
I can't speak. I have no idea where even that is. I don't cover the Range Creek portion, so I only cover the anthro. But I don't. So I'm not sure on that.
Good job, Derek.
We're sure glad you showed up tonight.
He brought his A game.
Yeah. Come on up, Ken.
Ken Evans. My question is the tribe number on the Yellowstone unit or cow elk is a third less than what you got cow elk permit, but yet on the Yellowstone unit, and I know on the west side that they have all the depredation permits and they have problems. My dad lives in Neola. He's a cattleman, been here for 20 years. He hasn't seen an elk on his place in 20 years. He hunts right above Neola, and he gets a bull once every 5 years, buys a cow permit every year. Last year was the first year ever that he's filled a cow permit in 10 years. Because we're just not seeing the numbers. And I agree to give the landowners these permits, but that, you know, the numbers are just not jiving what I'm hearing on both sides. And I mean, I spent 90 days on a horse on that unit last year, from Farm Creek to the Yellowstone River. And yes, the elk were on Indian ground, but I'm still not even seeing them numbers.
So your question is on the, do they have the cow tags? Is that what you're asking? Was that really the question?
The tribe does not have no cow tags because they feel there's not enough elk.
That's right. That's, well, I'm not sure it's because they don't feel there's not enough elk, but they aren't interested in antlerless harvest up there for sure. They've decided not to have cow permits on the unit up there. The tribe does not manage to a population objective. They don't have a number of elk that they're trying to manage for. They manage by what they, you know, what they hear from individuals or whatever it is, and just decide what number they want to manage for. They aren't legally obligated to. We are in the state of Utah. We're required by law to have a population objective for each of our units. And so we do manage to a population, or try to manage to a population objective. The tribe used to harvest 400 cows a year on the north unit up there. They did away with that about, what, six, 8 years ago, Tim?
Yeah.
When they stopped doing that. And there, it's a matter of opinion within the tribe. Some folks would like to see cow harvest up there. Some folks don't. And so it's just what they've decided right now is their game board has decided not to have cow tags up there. That the number of cow tags they have no input whatsoever on what we have. We are legally obligated to manage towards a population objective that was set through a legal process. So we are trying to manage towards our population objective up there. So we do have antlerless elk harvest across the unit and try to get as much as we possibly can without totally pushing on training all those elk to stay on the tribe year-round, because that's what happens when they get hunting pressure as they move to the tribe. That's why we've gone and been very successful and pushed so hard for this private lands only permit, so that we can remove some of those that are causing depredation and causing damage on the unit. It surprises me that you'd say that about Neola with not having elk on there. We have several hundred elk right now on private property up there causing problem coming off of the tribal land. We had to remove some last week, a matter of fact, up there. They're year-round residents now that come off the tribe and come down into Neola and are raiding agricultural crops. And so the thought that there aren't enough elk up there is in the Neola area, I guess, really surprises me, because there's a lot of evidence to dispute that quite heavily. So the tribe does count the population of elk up there. We had a meeting with them just this morning even, went over their counts, what they found this winter, even on a very mild winter. And they were commenting on how many more additional elk they saw on the forest. Basically, their counts jive right with what our population estimates are for the unit, which is 2,000 elk over our objective right now, what we have set. So,
let me add to that. You know, we are in the process of building some corrals to round up some horses and also the cows that are coming on to the tribal lands. And I know there are four corrals they're talking about building. And we are going to start trapping some of those elk, and we're going to start taking them to Hill Creek. So I do know that's in the plans. So I think they got like pretty close to $1 million put to the side that they're going to start using for those corrals.
Impressive. That'll be great. Some of the wildlife groups, just for your information, have helped contribute money to help the tribe try to remove some of those wild horses. Not wild horses, they're feral horses up there. They're just strays that are up there. They have a couple hundred of them up there, and we have raised some money, helped pay for the helicopter roundup that was done a couple of years ago there to try to remove some of those. They removed 114 horses, I think, that year, and they're still trying to remove some even now.
Matter of fact, we're just going to hit you guys up for some more money to help in the south unit.
Yeah, there's a lot of that trying to go on too for feral horses and cows down there.
Well, so either that, or you give us some bullets.
That's right.
I like that idea.
Would come help.
No, you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't. Poor boy.
Thanks, Randall. Appreciate that. Yeah. Other questions? Okay, we'll go into comments. I've got one comment card. Troy Justison, did you want to address this one?
Troy Justison, Sports Fish Wildlife. Tim, how many rounds of ammo do you need?
You got a couple of cases.
You need more than a couple of cases, man. As far as our stances on the division's recommendations, we support the division's recommendation on the antlerless. Thank you.
Thank you, Troy. All right, time to go into the rack discussion. Anybody have any heartburn with any of the proposals that's been made?
I need to ask one question real quick. On the North Slope, excuse me, Moose, how many of those, I'm trying to recall back to the CWMU plan, and the large amount of CWMUs that kind of come around to that North Slope. How many of them CWMUs are issued cow moose permits?
Currently?
Yes.
So currently there are none. But as we move forward, we'll start to look for their assistance as well. I don't want to go out too much on a limb here, but you know, when we got these animals and got them in hand this last year, we might be behind the eight ball. We might have should have started harvesting antlerless moose a lot of these areas several years ago. And again, we're concerned that we're going to do our best to try to get ahead of it, but it's not great. They weren't in great body condition.
I
Other discussion? Does anybody want to make a yep?
As a RAC member, I want to express appreciation to the Division of Wildlife Resources. They walk a pretty tight rope, trying to keep a balance between keeping the public happy and the private landowners happy. And so I take my hat off to you and express appreciation to you. And with that, I make a motion that we adopt antlerless plan as proposed.
I'll second it.
We had a motion by Joe Batty, seconded by Brad Horrocks, that we accept the antlerless permit recommendations for 2018 as presented. Any discussion? We'll bring it to a vote. All those in favor, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I love you guys. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cole. We appreciate all your time and efforts. All right, the next one up is the 2018 CWMU antlerless permit recommendations. And our private lands, public lands coordinator, Mike Wardle, is going to present this.
I'll be a lot quicker than Kobe.
The chair keeps looking this way every time.
So I'm Mike Wardle. I'm our private lands public wildlife coordinator, and I'll be presenting our CWMU antlerless permit recommendations. So before I get started into the actual recommendations, I just want to briefly explain how the split works on CWMUs. So you'll see on the left side of this table, it shows the split options for buck and bull permits on a CWMU. What that means is that a CWMU operator can choose how the permits are split between private tags that they are transferable, they can sell, and the public ones that go to the public draw. And whatever split they choose on that left side directly translates into how the antlerless permits are split up on that right side of the table. So for example, if an operator chooses the 90-10 split right there at the top for deer and elk, automatically, if antlerless permits are offered on that CWMU, 100% of those permits go to the public draw. What that has created is a great opportunity on private property for public hunters with antlerless tags. You'll see this is a summary of all the permits that we're recommending by species for the statewide on CWMUs. The number I'll draw your attention to is that 819 in the lower right-hand corner. That's 819 members of the public that will be given access to private property to hunt antlerless animals. One other thing before I get into the recommendations, I wanted to talk about some rationale of why we recommend to increase antlerless permits and why we recommend to decrease antlerless permits on CWMUs. Remember that these are chunks of private property and that otherwise would be inaccessible in a lot of cases. If we have the opportunity, we want to get hunters in there. The biggest thing in most cases is to help manage us to population objectives, especially when you look in the northern region. You look at the Chalk Creek unit, it's 96% private land. We rely heavily on CWMUs to help us get to our management goals. On the decrease side, one of the big things I'll touch on is animal distribution. Some of these CWMUs, because of their location, the distribution of wildlife plays heavily into what they're allowed to do with permit numbers. Some of these CWMUs, it's more of a migratory hunt. Some, they don't get cow elk on them until they're pressured on public land. And so we look a lot at the harvest success of the public cow hunters and make our recommendations off of that. So with that, I will get into our renewal applications by region. When a CWMU is created, it's created on a three-year basis, right? They're given a certificate of registration for 3 years. Once that 3 years is up, they have to submit a renewal applications. These ones that you're going to see are those that submitted renewal this fall. Mr. Chair, if it's all right with you, with the other regions, I'll put them up there, and if we have questions on specifics, we can go back. And when we get to the Northeastern, we'll go through the changes. So this is for the Northern region. Again, some more in the northern region. Recommended changes in the central region. So here in the northeastern region, recommending Bell Pronghorn permits on the Antelope Creek CWMU. This is a new hunt on that CWMU. Now we're recommending decreases in antlerless elk permits on Little Red Creek, Moon Ranch, and Sand Creek. That's our recommendations for the southeastern region. And the southern region. So the other change that you're seeing that you're asked to vote on is the change applications. So when these permit numbers are set, they're set for the 3 years of that CWMU's COR, or Certificate of Registration. If those permit numbers need to be changed during that COR, they submit a change application. And we had two of those this year. So these are CWMUs that are currently within their three-year operation and are requesting changes. And they're both out of the northern region. First one is Junction Valley. We recommend increasing their deer permits, antlerless deer permits, to 10. And on Rabbit Creek, we recommend decreasing doe pronghorn permits down to 0. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Mike, go back two slides. I guess go back one, just one right there. Help me understand that, like that increase in this one. Is this because they're qualified for additional tags, and so there's more public ones available, or is that?
So with Junction Valley specifically, it's a depredation situation. They have some alfalfa fields within their CWMU that are getting a lot of depredation problems, and so they wanted some doe permits to help kind of take the burden off of that landowner. And they have a 90-10 split. So again, back to that table at the first. That means that all antlerless permits that we issue on that CWMU are going to the public.
Okay. Other questions by the RAC? Question by the public. JC, you haven't been up the mic tonight.
Yeah, that's up.
All right.
I just come to listen.
All right.
I want to hear from Derek again.
Okay. Comments? Any comments? I don't have any comment cards on this topic, so we'll go into the RAC discussion. Anybody have any heartburn with anything they've seen? Then I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion. We accept them as the division has presented them.
I'll second that motion.
Good job. All right, we had a motion by Brad Horrocks to accept the 2018 CWMU antlerless permit recommendations as presented, seconded by Natasha. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Permit program changes by our law enforcement captain, Justin Shirley.
Is that going to work? All right. I appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm Captain Jay Shirley out of our Salt Lake office. I really appreciated waking up this morning on top of the Book Cliffs to see what you all have to offer, and we should all be very proud of what is up there, what a neat experience that is. And it's not the first time I've done it, but I've been thinking about it all day. So what I'm going to talk about tonight, I think we're all on the same page here, is we don't like to see people abuse what we work so hard to achieve. And we have a really neat program in the state that we offer permits through to those people that help us bring some of these people to justice that are abusing our resources. And we call it our Poaching Reported Reward Permit Program. The way this has been set up in the past is I'm going to talk a little bit about the purpose of the program, the history of our program, and how it's been set up, and then what we would like to propose to do tonight. We have been offering this. The proposal tonight, let me start right there, is we have had this option to give these permits to people that help us in our big game rule. We've had it in our cougar rule. We've had it in our turkey rule. What we're proposing tonight is to bring those out of those rules and put it into one new rule that is a poaching reported reward rule. As you can see, we didn't have that in Bear. That's what brought this up. Right when I moved to the Salt Lake office a couple years ago, we had a case that someone should have been able to be issued a Bear permit for their help in what had happened. And we did not have that in that rule, and we couldn't issue that permit. So I started to draft some language to do that, to add it to the Bear rule, and I thought, this is crazy because of the language is different in all those rules. How the permit is issued is different. We wanted to really consolidate it to be able to add to it without pulling out the species rule to be able to do that. So that's what we're looking to do. Again, we would like to add Bear to that program. We want to add Harvest Objective Cougar to that program. We also want to expand the program to general season permit opportunities. We have not done that in the past. It's been mainly for limited entry purposes. And then, again, we want to modify the standards and make sure it's equal across the board for who would qualify for these permits and what permits are available and how that process would work. A little bit on the program, I think you'll find this interesting. We started doing this in 1996. The division also has a program where we issue monetary rewards. It is completely separate from the permit reward process, and we give a lot of monetary rewards. So keep that in mind as we go through this, that a lot of people don't pick to have a permit, and we also don't always have that option to give them a permit, but we always have the option to give them a monetary reward.
The reason why questions
that have come up on that monetary reward that you may find interesting is, some of these people, they brought up a case that law enforcement's done here, and when they're ordered to pay restitution to the Division of Wildlife, most of the time that restitution is awarded to our Help Stop Poaching Fund. That's where we pay the monetary reward from. And that we do a lot of good work with that money for our officers as well as for the public. So, but in the past, this has primarily been used for deer and elk on highly sought-after limited and premium limited entry units. And then we'd like to adjust those standards and who qualifies from those three rules. So people have asked how many permits we issue through this program. This graph shows the number based on from 1996 to 2017. You can see we've had a year, 98, where we didn't issue any reward permits. And we've had a high year, I think it's 2010-11 season, where we actually issued 17 permits. And so the average has been about nine and a half permits a year. So I put this slide in here to remind me to also mention that when we issue these permits, they don't come from the public's allotment of permits. This permit, if there is one issued, is in addition to what's available for the public. So we're not taking the resource from someone else to give it to another person. So this has been the species on the permits that we've issued. So you can see in total over those 22 years, we've issued 209 permits, and that's the list of species. Cougar's been added, and we are yet to issue a cougar reward permit. That doesn't mean we haven't had a lot of help from people out in the public on some of those cases, but if they don't choose that they would like a permit, we issue them a monetary reward instead. So, but you can see that deer and elk make up the bulk of that. You can probably do the math with me there, but I think it's 8 once-in-a-lifetime species have been issued permits in this in 22 years. So we're not adding a whole lot to that group. Who would qualify? And a lot of this language has just been pulled from the big game rule. We didn't change most of this. But we're making it standard across the board for this rule. A qualifying individual would be anyone that provides accurate or credible information regarding a wildlife violation in Utah. And the division uses that information to secure a prosecution. and that that individual cooperates and supports the division through the prosecution process. Now, something that's very critical is what is a successful prosecution. We don't give a reward permit for every violation that is out there that someone helps us with. A monetary reward, sure. We try to do that as often as we can. But for the purpose of issuing a permit, it's going to have to be what is called our wanton destruction of protected wildlife statute. That's that 2320 and 4 up there. And then we, what we consider successful prosecution is if we file that charge gets filed through the court process as 2320 and 4, then that individual is eligible for a reward permit. Whether the court then makes a determination down the road and the individual is able to plead to a lesser offense, as long as it was filed as that charge, we're comfortable issuing that reward permit. And you have both Class B misdemeanor and Class A and felony there. The reason why you have Class B is because turkey violations, if someone were to poach a turkey, it's going to fall in a Class B misdemeanor violation. So there's a whole good discussion about that, but the way that law is set up is the level of the offense, whether it's a Class B up to a felony, is based on the value of the wildlife that was taken. Very good law that this state has for punishing those who abuse our resources. So the only way you would have a Class B wanton destruction would be turkey. The hunts that would qualify: deer, elk, pronghorn, moose, bighorn sheep, mountain goat, bison, cougar, bear, and turkey. The way this would be done is there would need to be 10 or more public draw permits on the unit before we would consider issuing a reward permit for that. Again, we don't take from that number, but we also don't want to add permit numbers to that unit if there's very few hunters on there. We want them to have that experience. What we would do, and also if giving that permit wouldn't exceed 10% of the permits issued on that unit, we would do it. So if there's 40 permits issued on a unit, we could give up to 4 in that unit and still be okay. Again, we've never been there in the past. I hope things don't get that bad, so I don't think they will. You don't hope that we give a lot of these permits out, but we sure want to give them to those that deserve them when they help us. So in the past, we've always let the individual pick which season they would like, whether they're, doesn't matter when they turn the poacher in. If the guy's a, you know, the guy shoots it during the rifle deer hunt and poaches it, we'll give whoever turns that person in the option of which season they would like. However, we are going to restrict that and not allow the multi-season option, which is the most sought after, I would imagine. But they could select their weapon type and the season that they'd like. And then we do only issue one permit per successful prosecution. So a couple other questions that seem to come up with this program, especially to those that are turning people in. If they are a hunter, they don't forfeit their bonus or preference points. They don't incur a waiting period except for once-in-a-lifetime species. We cannot issue you a permit for a once-in-a-lifetime species if you have already drawn that through our public draw. So you would not be eligible there. But we do have a good option for you, and we'll get to that. You can only get one poaching reward permit in a single calendar year per species. And you can still only use or possess one permit for an antlered or horned animal of the same species in a single hunt year. So if you did get one of these permits and say you had drawn and then you were eligible for this, we would decide whether you wanted your permit that year or the following year, and we'd give you that option. But you can't have two in the same season. It's non-transferable, but you can use it as, you could still use it through the mentor program and the trial hunting program. And you still have to possess a hunting or combination license, and you have to be eligible to hunt in Utah, mainly meaning you can't be on suspension. So that would be a weird situation. So I'm going to define the process for each of these groups, but they're relatively the same. So we'll be able to go through them very quickly. But for once in a lifetime, it is a little bit different because the number of permits, as you've seen from Kirby's presentation, is fairly limited. So if someone were to turn in someone, they would get a permit for the male animal or hunter's choice, because you have bison and goat in there, of the same species and on the same unit as that was illegally taken. If, again, if there weren't 10 permits available there, we would go to the closest, same species, and the next closest unit. If that weren't available, we'd keep going down the list. But a lot of the once-in-a-lifetime units are never going to hit that 10-permit threshold. So if it doesn't, well, so a lot of them do, actually, but it may end up being, you know, if it was a moose, it may end up being a mountain goat permit that you get. It may, if it's a sheep, it may end up being a bison permit for you on the next closest unit. So we would work through that process, but we do want to define it in here of how we would go through that process so we don't get ourselves in situations where it looks like we're picking and choosing for the individual. And again, if we went through all the once-in-a-lifetime species and nothing was available, then the division and in conjunction with the person would pick a limited entry unit to give them a permit on. So I see that. I think it depends on where numbers would go, but right now there would be enough permits in a couple of the once-in-a-lifetime species to be able to make that happen. So on premium limited entry, and this will be the same process more or less for the next couple, but we only have 2 premium limited entry deer units in the state, and if you were to turn someone in on one, we'd give you a permit for that same species on the same unit, unless it wasn't available based on that same criteria. Then we'd go to the other one. There's only 2. And then if it wasn't available, we'd go back to the original unit where the poaching occurred and give you a limited entry permit to the next closest unit. So say it happened on the Henrys, and it wasn't available on the Henrys, and it wasn't available on the Ponsagant for some reason or another, it would probably go to San Juan Elk Ridge, would probably be the next closest limited entry unit there. Same process for limited entry deer, elk, and pronghorn. A permit for a male animal of the same species on the same unit. If that were unavailable, which most of these units, it would be available, unless something changed drastically, but not all. If that were unavailable, we'd start going to the next closest in proximity limited entry unit for the same species. General season deer and elk.
Back up to the wall.
This is a part where we've never been before, but we want to offer this as an opportunity. Again, we're not sure how many permits we'll issue through this process. In the past, most people have been happy with monetary reward in these situations, but some of these general season deer permits and elk permits are getting harder to get, so they may be interested in a reward permit, and we want to be able to offer that opportunity. So it'd be for a male animal, same species on the same unit. If that were unavailable, which I don't see too many situations where that would be the case, it would be the same animal in the next closest proximity unit. Now, something that you have different with general season deer and elk, if you think of our general season elk units, our spike bull and our any bull permits, if it is, and we also on the deer, now we have the late muzzleloader limited entry hunt that happens on general season units. If that's the case, that's that last bullet point. If the unit essentially offers both general season and limited entry opportunities, the division may issue a limited entry permit for that species using the limited entry. So if you turn in a poacher on that poaches a deer and it happens to be on one of the units that has a late muzzleloader limited entry unit or permit available, we would let you pick that option if you want it. And essentially on our, you know, there's not a great benefit to it on the any bull units. You would be offered an any bull elk permit. But on your spike units, you would be offered a mature bull tag in those units. So you could pick the spike tag if you want, but I'm guessing most people would pick the mature bull elk tag. For cougar and bear are a little bit different in the fact that we are only going to issue 1 poaching reported reward permit per limited entry unit. Again, I don't know that we'll ever be where we would need to issue 2 of those per unit, but or have that circumstance. So far, we've never issued any of these, but you never know. But we don't want to saturate a unit with reward permit. So we want to be able to spread that out. If it was taken on a harvest objective unit, we would issue the person a limited entry cougar tag for the closest unit. They could pick a harvest objective permit if they'd like that unit, but if they want a limited entry permit, we would do that on the next closest unit. Again, that's kind of what that last statement says. Same process for bear. I honestly think we'll have the opportunity to issue some of these through bear. So we get a lot of people that help us out, and a lot of those people don't hunt at all and aren't interested in a permit, and they're interested in the monetary reward aspect of it. But we really want our officers, and the public, and the sportsmen to know that these programs are available, and they're a valuable tool to us. On some of these cases, money may not help somebody turn in that information. They may not be willing to do that, but they may for a permit on some of these. Turkey, generally the same. We would issue it whether it was a general season or a limited entry turkey unit, and we would let the individual pick on those. If they want the Northeast Region limited entry turkey tag, they could pick that, or they could pick the general season so they could go later in the year and hunt if they would like. And I don't see any issues on having to switch units back and forth on that. So again, we're thankful for everybody that helps us. We all have big jobs, and we appreciate your time. I do want to say that if this rule is adopted, it would automatically take out those sections of the rule of those species that it's in, and we would consolidate it into this. So thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Captain Shirley. Any questions by the RAC? Sounds like a pretty good deal to me.
I do have one question.
Yep.
I know it's getting late. Sorry. How is the monetary reward determined?
That's a great question. So we have a guideline that we follow on the monetary rewards, and it could be anywhere. We break it out by species.
Sure.
Right now it goes up to $1,000 on some of those, and then there's also the discretion of the chief to go above that based on certain cases that, again, a lot of these cases we get a lot of restitution money to our Help Stop Poaching account, and it's great to be able to give that back to the sportsmen who are helping us out. But it can vary based on the species. I think in the rule for elk, it's $700, and that doesn't always mean that that's where it's going to be. A lot of it's based, you know, sometimes it's as simple as a guy making a phone call saying, you know, I don't know if there's something going on out there or not, but maybe you should look into it. And we go look into it, and we end up working something and finding, that's where we make determinations with the individual on where we should be and what kind of extent they were helping us and different things like
that. So it's really case by case.
It can be, yes.
Other questions? Other rec? Another public? Discussion by the rec?
I think it's a great program. You know, I really do, and since it's been, you know, incorporated, I think it's really did a lot. Might have been a little hard on some family relations over the years, but it's a great program. $1,000 next year. Long as the cranes aren't included.
Bring up a valid point there, though, that there are other species that we will probably look at down the road as adding to this rule, whether that's swans. I don't know about cranes, if that's what was brought up, but those are things we look at. Some of those species have different parts to them. Like swan, the number of permits is actually not set by us. It's set by the federal government. So if we were to issue swan poaching reward permits, poaching reported reward permits, they would have to come from that public allocation. So there, you know, we'd have to cross that bridge and see if that was an option. So
Other discussion? I'll entertain a motion.
Your turn.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we accept this poaching, what is it called, poaching reported reward program as it's been presented here tonight.
I'll second the motion.
Dan made the motion, and Jones, Rebecca, seconded it. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I got 5. 10. Thank you. Okay, that does all of our items. Appreciate everybody being here tonight, and we will close the meeting about 10 after 10.